Welcome to Glee Chat number 91. It is 91, yes. I haven't copied that incorrectly. That's so many episodes. I'm going to say that every week, probably. We're back with Caitlin, Mitch, Jack, and me. I'm Natalie. Hello this week. Hello, everyone.
Hey.
Hello.
Howdy ho.
Hi. We're continuing on with Glee Chat flashbacks. So we're powering through season two now, rewatching most important episodes in chronological order of Glee season one through to undecided to end of season two or end of season three. We did start Glee Chat originally as season three. You can hear our takes on those episodes with a slightly different lineup way back in the day. But we were maybe hoping to get to the end of the original's high school run, you know, the original cast high school run, and cover those before Glee season six, our final season, comes back. So we're trying not to just do every second episode or whatever. Like, you know, we're trying to pick out episodes for certain reasons. So if you've got, you know, ideas to contribute about what episodes you'd like us to, you know, to see us review, what ones you think are the most important for whatever reason from season one, two, and three, you can comment on our Hyperball page with this episode or any episode upcoming. You can reach us on Twitter as well, which is Glee_chat. That's probably the best way to find us. And yeah, we do have Instagram and stuff like that, but if you want to communicate, Twitter is probably the best, or the Hyperball comments, to let us know what you think of what we've done with flashbacks so far, or what episodes you might be interested in seeing in future. This week was, I think, the first time we've ever had a completely unanimous vote on the two upcoming episodes that we've had. I don't know if everyone just sort of agreed to it, or if it was everyone's number, you know, number one preference, but we all selected Never Been Kissed and Furt, which is 206 and 208. So, yeah, were these everyone's first choices for the episodes? Jack, I think it was for you.
Yeah, it was for me. I'm always a very big fan of the competition episodes.
Oh, so, yeah.
But I was glad that if we weren't going to do that, like, Furt is a better episode, so I'm glad that this is the one we chose instead. So
yeah. How about you, Mitch?
Yeah, I'm really into these two episodes because of the continuity between the Kurt. Is there a shit name for him I can do just to make this easier? Not like the actual ship. The Kurtofsky storyline stuff that's going on from,
yeah.
Yeah, it just really, it connects really well, even though they're not consecutive. So it's,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That's really what drew me to these.
And Caitlin, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, Never Been Kissed for obvious reasons. And Furt, I haven't rewatched since the first run. So.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm sure we'll get into how it made you feel, potentially, at that time. I haven't watched it in ages, and I had to, delay the start time of the show by 15 minutes because I was crying too much. So that's about where we're going to be. So we'll go into Never Been Kissed straight away, which has a few alternating plots that we're going to talk about in, you know, not exactly chronological order, but we're going to sort of stick to the various points of each plot in a little bundle, and hopefully they'll run quite nicely. The other plots are sort of connected to each other. So the first one that we're going to address is the plot in Never Been Kissed of, oh, by the way, here's what you missed on Glee. They did Rocky Horror and it was a complete shambles, the end. Like, great.
I love that episode.
Great, hilarious episode, but oh my God, it's ridiculous.
It's so funny.
John Stamos' performance is horrible.
Oh God! All right. Well,
I hate his rendition. It's just whatever that song is—the rockabilly, rock my soul, whatever. Yeah, it just it doesn't fit his voice, and it's horrible. I think they couldn't have cast that worse.
We did.
No, I liked it.
Well, we didn't pick. Guys, we're not here for the Rocky Horror episode. We didn't pick it for a reason. So.
But Sam in golden underwear, please.
Yeah, but he feels bad about it. Anyway.
Diana Agron is hot.
Yeah, don't objectify Sam in the golden underwear when it makes him feel like shit. That's wrong, Mitch. well, it's true. It's a whole body issues thing, so you shouldn't be going, yeah, that's hot. Like, you should be having compassion. Anyway,
I didn't even remember that plot point. It's like the one thing I remember about all the costumes. Like, so it's the most distinct to me. But yeah, no, I get it.
Because I don't want to keep talking about this, but
I do now when you talk about it.
They make Will do it. Will has to be Rocky in the gold shorts.
Okay, yeah.
Because
wait, I don't remember him really.
Yeah, no, let's not. Shall we not? Let's not.
Okay, let's move on. Yeah, okay.
Let's move on. If you guys want to
go
and rewatch the Rocky Horror episode if you must, but, you know.
That's going to be fuel for our fire later, because I'm sure there's going to be some stuff we're going to want to add in about a certain number that Will dies.
There's not too much continuity in that episode anyway. So this episode, we have Coach Beast and her plot with the football team, in which they basically decide to start using her image as a way of cooling off when getting too heated up while making out. Now, yeah, and then Will kind of finds out about this, gets really mad, and, you know, Beast finds out about it as well, and things progress horribly from there, basically. So, first point is that everyone is awful. Like, all of the boys are terrible in general. Like, is this a thing that happens in high school? Like, I just don't remember anything like this happening with boys. I don't know. I just, this is just...
It's a little bit uber sexual and uber open, and I don't know that that many people would be as comfortable as the Glee Boys were in Tina, too. I love that Tina's included in this vapor rape.
She is a very sexually aggressive person, which is not a bad thing, and it could have been done much better, but they give her the worst plots in the world. Poor Tina. Anyway.
I mean, it's almost like they should have added in Becky to this, looking forward to seeing how sexually aggressive she gets.
No.
Not that I wanted it, God.
No, I know. Don't even want to touch on that, because, you know, Becky's sexual aggression is pretty disturbing at the best of times, but don't think that they, you know, I think that they would be towing some pretty fine lines if they actually sort of put that into practice. It sort of toes the line between inappropriate and like offensive at the moment, and it would go all the way into like, wow, that's really not cool. So yeah, Becky, we're glad, is not a part of this plot, I'd like to say, but yeah. That initial conversation between Sam and Finn, boys, you're so horrible. Why are you like this?
I'm like 2 years out of high school, so I still remember it like a little bit, but from what I remember, like none of that shit happened. Like,
yeah.
It's just Glee's example of, you know, being crazy.
Yeah. Here's one thing I never noticed before, is that Mike Chang, what? Mike Chang is a hypocrite. How about this? Like, did anyone else notice this?
I'm confused about what you mean. I saw that in the dog.
He told the trick to Tina. The conversation is between him and Tina, and you know, he tells her about the, like, you know, the trick of using Beast, and then when she uses it and is like Beast while they're doing the making out in the astronomy room, he freaks out and is like, "Keep your hands off my woman," to Beast. I'm like, is this not a thing? Like, you know what I mean? He told her about the trick, so why didn't... What the hell happened there? No?
I don't know, but I just think I need to say for the posterity...
Whoa, all three of you are talking at once. Mitch, sorry, go ahead.
I wanted to say for the posterity of all teenage boys, I never was once familiar with anything about a cold shower doing anything in particular, and as I've already said, I wouldn't have talked about that with my friends, even so it's so awkward that this is such a thing. Like, even between Finn and Sam, the way this whole thing starts, I don't even know how I feel about the way that Finn deals with his own, life hack, the mailman. Yeah, and it's just like, I don't know. I don't know that that's the right way to approach your body and your sexuality. I feel that that's going to maybe hurt and repress you in a certain way, so that you're going to start associating sex with
the mailman.
Bad things.
I don't know about that.
The mailman, specifically. And Beast, I think that Beast is a much larger issue that we're definitely going to all delve into. That, just to touch on, I think that we're going to start going into maybe, like, some people did or didn't like that sexually, and that's why this was also an issue, on top of the fact that they were, you know, objectifying her I mean, yes, in their own minds, but still publicly because they were talking about it to everyone. I mean, it's a big thing. But, Jack, I'm really eager to hear what you have to say about where, exactly what I'm talking about, because I'm sure you have some kind of opinions going on here.
I know, I agree with what you said about Beast, and, like, it's not good. But in terms of, like, in, like, specifically with Mike, like what you said, Natalie, like, yeah. I didn't really think about it too much, like, as in terms of him being a hypocrite, because I really think it's just, like, I can delve into and get really deep with certain parts of Glee, but I think I also recognize that, like, there's a lot of funny aspects, and I always love Tina in, like, season 1 and 2 and 3, like, not so much 4 and 5, but so that's why I found this really funny. But, and, like, with what you were saying, Mitch, like, I definitely agree with everything you said about Beast, like, it's not great, and I just don't, like I said, I just don't remember anything like this being present in when I was in high school, so and I never dealt with it myself. So.
No, yeah. And the closest it gets in high school is where I know that it's a pretty common thing in even like all boys schools for boys to do like a ball tap or what they call a titty twister or just like those kind of sexual things.
Oh, I don't even want to know about.
It's highly unpleasant, but like I've been to 3 different high schools, or at least visited or whatever, that I've seen this at, and I was just always disturbed. And like, I mean, if anyone did that to me, I would not be happy. I think that there would be like grave consequences to that thing, much.
But that's,
I think it is because it's meant to like sexually embarrass you.
Like, it's getting hit in the balls and hurts.
It hurts, but to me, it has a sexual connotation to it, to be like hurting your manhood. And that's why I also didn't like that, or like whatever the titty twister. Like it just.
Yeah, I'm not sure where this is going.
No. It relates. I'm talking about like where I saw the sexual reactions of boys in my high schools, and how I didn't go to conversations, but there were some physical things going on like that were probably just as disturbing.
Yeah. Caitlin. Yeah. This entire plot line, from the perspective of not a teenage boy, how did you feel about it, basically? This methodology and this entire situation, basically.
This plotline is horrible, and the only thing that I think of during this is how Dot Marie Jones must feel about having all these horrible, like,
costumes
jokes at her offense. Because it's about how she as a human being looks.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, That bothers me a lot.
I definitely think about that a lot as well, because I remember like a very long time ago, my uncle, who he's a big fan of Glee, he was over my house once, and we were watching this episode, and I can't remember specifics, but he was telling me the story about how Dot Marie Jones got cast on Glee, like how she's like, he's a singer, but she's also like a professional like wrestler or something. I can't remember.
A weightlifter or a shot putter or something. Yeah, she's an she was an athlete. She used to be like an Olympic athlete or something. Yeah. Yeah.
And with what you were saying, Caitlin, like, it's always, like, in the back of my mind, and I can't remember, like, if my thoughts have, like, construed, like, what he said, but he either did say that she was aware that this was going to be a storyline and signed on knowing it was going to happen, or she wasn't, but she dealt with it. I can't remember, like, that's just, it's in the back of my mind, and I can't remember what exactly was said, but I know that I'm pretty sure it was definitely, like, a topic of conversation when she was, like, on the show, like, before this happened,
I mean,
just it's so hard not to take that personally, like,
for real. Like,
because I am the physical manifestation of this character, so this is my face, this is my body.
Yeah.
Oh, you're so ugly that I'm gonna think about you to cool down. Like, she's a lovely person. I'm just like, this really is so horrible for her.
I mean,
she's so cute with like her all caps tweets and all that stuff. And she has like a really strong heart, you could say, because she's so enthusiastic when she's on an episode of Glee, and she writes like, you know, thanks for watching in pumpkins. It's so cute. And I think back to this, and I'm like, how would she react to people writing to her like, you know, horrible things in accordance to the way that she's being made fun of in this episode? It breaks my heart. It makes me so sad. I always wonder about this with any actor in a role that they're meant to be made fun of. That hurts. How do they do that?
There are a lot of actors that belong to agencies that are specifically like for a character actor in a certain way, like someone who's like obese or someone who's like really ugly, and that they're meant to like you know, that they are playing, you know, that they are purposely being used for that purpose on screen, and like it makes me feel quite uncomfortable. I mean, that people make the choice. This is not the case with Dot Marie Jones, but in more extreme case, there are people that belong to agencies specifically to do that kind of thing, And it just makes me wonder how, you know, that feels like that they've made the choice to kind of make their career or out of like their, you know, whatever
accepting
it is,
that's who you are,
you know, whatever it is that them yeah. being controversial about,
right.
it might be, right. it might be empowering to some people, be like, yeah, I'm getting money for this. I'm getting money for this thing that people made fun of me in high school or whatever, if you know what I mean. But on the other hand, it must always feel a bit crap. Like, I don't know. It's definitely like a career for mm-hmm. some people is doing acting for that kind of thing. Like for being a you know, some sort of stereotype on television, basically, or movies. And
that is really hard. I mean, I doubt what about the guy?
Oh, sorry. That's not the case with Dot Marie Jones, but like there are people who are even more extreme than like her circumstance that's their job. So it's weird.
There's one character actor from the movie. I think it's Big Daddy. He's the homeless person in that movie. And he's to me like my go-to character actor that I think of, but I think he is breaking a lot of grounds because if I'm getting it correctly, I'm 90% sure he is. No, someone can correct me very quickly if this is wrong. I'm pretty sure he's the main actor on Boardwalk Empire now, and where he doesn't play the same kind of like weasel-eyed kind of character.
Oh my god, anyone... are you? No, 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 no.
Who am I thinking of? Why am I mistaking
you? Are you talking about like John Buscemi?
He's the guy from Big Daddy.
He's not exactly a character actor. He's incredibly famous.
Yeah,
I've always seen him as a character actor.
Bringing it back. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Go on, Jack.
Well, I'm saying like yeah, like Steve Buscemi. Yeah, but bringing it back to like Glee and stuff. Like every single character on this show has had some kind of insult thrown to them about who they are, sexuality, what they look like, things like that. And like it sucks. It sucks that there's a whole storyline like centered around. Like around Beast in that sense. So I think it's a bit more jarring because we've had a whole episode of this to like be like to watch. But if you think of like all the insults Santana throws to Rachel or what Quinn throws to Rachel or even like, I mean, everyone like jokes around like with Kurt and stuff. And it's funny when Sue calls him porcelain, but that's not a good example because that's hilarious. But like every single character has had an insult thrown to them. So I think it's a bit different with Beast, but it's not as different to a lot of other like, yeah, like every single actor on this show has had to like deal with some kind of like insult about who they are and how they look and stuff. That's what I'm saying. So,
yeah, that's true. But I think for a lot of the people, like Rachel or whatever, we can still some of it is the way that we sort of perceive it because we can look at, you know, Santana or Quinn insulting her and go, "Hey, that's not fair. She's still like pretty and normal and stuff." Whereas the stuff with Beast, it's made out to be like justified in a way, or not justified, but like. It presents it as like, yeah, everyone thinks this, if you know what I mean. And it's...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It is a bit different. But regardless, it's a freaking... It is... What Caitlin said is completely true. It's so upsetting. It's very like, But okay, let's move on to the next point of this plot, which is that, you know, Will finds out about what they're doing. And I actually really love that little scene with Sam and Mike. I was like, they need to be best friends forever. I love them kind of being... pulled up and just how they were. I always really liked that. But Will finds out and he's like, you guys have to stop this. This is wrong. Here are all the reasons this is wrong. So wrong. Beast can never know. Like, she can never know this. You have to make everyone stop. This is terrible. Great. Wonderful points. Great scene. Will calling people on their bullshit when they deserve it. You know, and the kids don't really have anything to say in response to that. Fantastic. Nailed it, Will. What does Will then go and do? He tells her, because Will is literally the worst human being on the planet, and he doesn't know how to do human interaction, and so Beast finds out about this. You know, he clearly gives her enough clues that something is, that he knows about what's up, that she pushes him and he tells her, and whatever, like, you know, does she have the right to know, does she not have the right to know, regardless, he knew that it would be worse for her to know, and he still, you know, he could have lied, he could have done anything, he could, if he made the kids stop and he could have covered it up, he could have done literally anything, but no. And then she quits because he told her and he blames the kids even though they stopped and didn't tell her. So that's all fantastic. Caitlin, how did this make you feel? I just want to get your take on this immediately.
It's, I hate you, Will. He has, like, these moments in this episode where he'll do something really good and then immediately completely nullify undermine it.
Yeah, like...
Yeah, like, he does completely. It twice in the episode, and I'm just like, oh, that was really good. Oh, you are horrible. Like, that's how I feel about it.
See, I didn't think of it that way. Like, I'm rebuttal. Like, I'm opposite to you guys. Like, I mean, obviously, I don't like Will more than anyone, but in this episode, I think he was just... It's hard to see because, like, of what we know of him. But I think he was just being, like, nice. Like, he was just trying to be a good friend and think, like, she has to know this. Like, you can't keep, like, a secret away from somebody who, you know, I kind of understand where he's coming from. I'm not saying, like, all this justified, but I don't think it's as horrible. Like, in my opinion, is that it's not as horrible as, like, you guys think it is.
It's not malicious, but it's like he told them not to tell her, and then he told her... And then she quit and he blamed the kids, if you know what I mean. It's just like, guys, really. Like, I don't know, it was just so bad. But anyway.
She does push him to tell her.
Yeah, she does,
like,
really.
Kind of tries to smooth it over a little bit. And she's like, no, tell me, give me details. So there is that, but.
It's horrible. It is.
He could have done literally anything but what he did.
Yeah, it is very well done. Like, it is, the plot is very well put together. It's just horrible. So the main parts of this is, you know, that you know, he finds out that she's going to quit, and he goes and talks to her in the locker room as well, about, you know, his, you know, her not quitting and what her life has been like. And he finds out that she, you know, has never been kissed, hence the episode name and also other reasons. But, you know, that she's basically just never been, you know, romantically involved or anything like that, because, you know, she's always wanted those things, but it's just never worked for her because of people's preconceptions of her or the way that she, you know, has encountered people before. And so they have this talk about how, you know, nice she is and how she deserves lovely things. And then he kisses her to prove that, like, someone will kiss her. And I don't know, man. I don't know, man.
This is the other place.
Yeah.
That will completely under... He has this beautiful speech to her about how she's a wonderful person and she's beautiful inside and out. And I'm like, great. Stop right there. That was beautiful. That was very supportive. It was a very good friendship thing. And then he pity kisses her. He gives her her first kiss, which clearly is very meaningful. And it's a pity thing. Like, you're horrible. I hate you, Will.
Just so bad. And
yeah, I suppose I agree with that. I do agree with that part, definitely. Like, it's just an example of how somebody sort of, like, they say they keep talking and they say that extra bit more that just does not need, like, that, yeah, that there's the extra bit more that does not need to be done. Like, a lot of people have that problem. They don't know when to stop when, like, something is great.
Yeah. So I don't know, a lot of people at the time thought it was really cute. I thought it was not very cute. I thought it was, like, condescending and weird, but yeah.
Yes. Very condescending.
So they apologize to her with a song, which is one of the songs of the episode, the mashup songs, because that's Will's, you know, extra plot that isn't actually that important. Is the boys versus girls mashup, yay, preparations, whatever, etc. They're going to do songs. Songs aren't really part of the plot in this episode. But they use this one for the boys to apologize to Beast. And it's very nice, the apology, and she accepts it, and they're really sweet to her. One thing that always stuck out to me, I'm just saying this is a comment of my opinion, I don't know if anyone agrees or doesn't notice. Puck is not someone who is ever involved in this plot line. He's not involved in the objectifying, you know, the cool down thing with Beast. And at the end, when he says something to her, like, you know, he says, you know, and you should smile because you do when you do it's pretty and it lights up the room. Like, seriously, I always look, I overblow Puck moments a lot, but I always took this to heart really strongly because I see, like, Puck is a lot more, like, he's a lot more both experienced with women and, like, open with women, you know, despite all his terrible behavior, than any of those other boys like Finn and Sam and Mike and all of those. I think that he, out of all of them, does genuinely see, you know, all women, like, the beauty potential beauty or, you know, or whatever in all women in a way that's legit, as opposed to them sort of giving a lip service apology. And I always just, the way that he spoke to her seemed really genuine to me, and it always stood out to me. It stood out to me the first time, and it still did this time. And because we've seen him with various people, we've seen him with, you know, moms, and we've seen him with Lauren Zeiss, and we've seen him with all sorts of different girls, like from Quinn to, like, you know, whoever. Like, he genuinely, for all his foibles, he genuinely appreciates all women. And I always took that really seriously. I don't know why. Maybe that's just me really overdoing it, but I don't know if that's something anyone else noticed.
I didn't, but I love him more than I thought I could now that I realized, you know, he was involved in the plot, and now afterwards he says that
like,
little
do you know
comment.
What I
like,
mean?
He wasn't wanting to condone it. I do agree. I like that now.
Like, I don't know if it was like, oh, he would take a stand against it, but he wasn't involved in the plot. He wasn't one of the people using that, and from what we know about him, he is very open about women, and I just really liked that. Now, the main thing I wanted to talk about with this plot line as well is we've got some spoilers for season 6, which has made people a little bit angry about Beast, basically, and her plot line for season 6, which is, and I first saw this spoiler come up, oh God, I think I jinxed it or something, because I saw it come up on like a website, one of those like e-news websites that gets like, oh, this is going to happen in one of these 12 shows, if you know what I mean. We've got a plot line, major character is going to, this is going to happen to them. We're not going to tell you what show it is. And then it sort of came out through Glee sources that it was Glee, and Glee was one of the shows on the list. And I'm like, I have no idea how this could work on Glee, but I've got this terrible feeling that whatever this plot it is, it's going to happen on Glee. And I was right. It was. Which is that they're going, the spoiler was that they were going to have a female character make the decision to transition to male, to sort of explore being transgender. And it has come out in spoilers recently that this is going to be Beast, and it's going to be like that the football team and Will, etc., are all like sort of, you know, she's dealing with this decision and people are like, you know, supportive and respectful and whatever. And this is such a hard thing to make a call on, and I'd sort of like to get everyone's opinions on this, but we were talking about it on Twitter. This is such a hard thing to make a call on. This is such a hard thing to be like, don't do a transgender plot. No, that's really bad of you, Glee, because, of course, that's an issue that people are just wanting more and more representation of lately, and it should be. However, this is the worst possible way to do it for this show, because this episode has proved, and many other episodes with Beast has proved, that despite the stereotypes of her appearance, or despite the stereotypes of her, like, job or her history, that she is a straight woman who, like, identifies as, like, a girl inside, like, that it's, like, really important for that to be recognized despite, like, the stereotypes of what she looks like. So is it just like they're going to toss that out now? Like, all this actually really good work they did with this character, that they're just going to be like, oh, no, actually, you know what? You know, she's a football coach. She's a big, beefy lady. Oh, lol, let's just make her transition into a man, because that'll work, despite the fact that they have really made an effort to show that, you know, despite appearances, that she, her womanhood is really important. So, Jack, how did you react to that?
I mean, all I really read was that, Beast will be transitioning. Is it confirmed she's going to be transitioning, or is it just that she's considering it?
I've got to. I'm really hoping it's that she, like, that someone, like, I don't know, like, Unique or something, because at least Unique and Kitty are going to be in season 6 out of the...
Unique's coming back. I saw that, which I'm happy about.
So maybe she gets inspired by, like, this may or may not be correct, but from what I see, there seems to be a complete transgender... They meet a complete transgender glee club or something like that. I don't know how that works. And maybe Beast gets, like, curious, if you know what I mean. Like, maybe this is what is... Maybe this is what would make my life better. And then maybe she decides, no, at the end, actually, I really do feel like a woman, which would be preferable, but I don't know exactly
the details.
That'd
be good. I'd like that. Yeah. But I do know that, like, this storyline is going to start in episode 3, Jagged Little Tapestry, I think it's called. And I know that only recently Alex Newell has come on set.
Okay.
And I'm sure they finished episode 3 by now. I'm sure they have.
Well, so they're just like adding this in like late or something, like.
Oh, I've got no idea. I've been trying to avoid a lot of season 6 spoilers, and Natalie, Caitlin, and I were just quickly having a chat on Twitter about. I agree definitely with Caitlin how you worded it, and I'm not very good at articulating my thoughts on this. So if you want to like say how you think, Caitlin, I'll most likely agree with what you say.
Okay, so my thought was just kind of building off of what Natalie said, is they've done a really good job of stressing the importance of Beast's womanhood, despite her not being traditionally feminine, that these things are very important to her. Mm. Like she says in this episode, you know, deep down inside, I'm just a girl, you know, that sort of thing. So they've done a really good job of that. So it feels like because them choosing her character to transition, it's saying, well, because she is this non-traditionally feminine person, she's clearly lying to herself about being a woman.
Mm.
So
it feels like they're going for the easy joke or something like that.
Yeah, and it rubs me the wrong way because of what they've done with her to stress the importance of her femininity, of her internal femininity, essentially. Like, there are a lot of butch women who are straight, but they struggle with that because they're not the traditionally feminine beauty that's out there, and that's a struggle for them. So I've really appreciated her story in that way. So it almost seems like they're kind of undercutting it and saying, but she can't be a woman because of the way she looks and that she's a football coach and that sort of thing, which it really rubs me the wrong way. Even if that's not the message they're trying to send, that's how it feels.
Yeah, I agree, I think. Mitch, did you know much about this one, Mitch, as well?
Oh, you read my mind. I was about to say, I hadn't really... maybe I heard you guys talk about it somewhere. It's kind of like in recesses of my memory. Is this new information?
Pretty new. Yeah, pretty new. We were just messaging about it the other day, but it's pretty
new. Yeah, I mean, I haven't really had too much time to digest it. My first gut reaction thought was, this is possibly, I don't know if there's any credence to this, this is just Mitchell's brain, all right? No sources or anything. Maybe this has the potential of being Dot Mary Jones saying, this is what I'm doing in my life, and if we can do this on Glee, that's cool. But I don't know if there's any credence to that, because I don't know Dot Mary Jones' personal life as a person. I know plenty about Beast as the character, which is why I'm agreeing with you guys on that. You know, she's proud of her womanhood, and she's comfortable in that, but I don't know anything about Dot Mary Jones. So, I mean, that's a potential.
I very much doubt that it's that, but, I mean, it could be. We've had, you know... There are certainly transgender actors playing transgender roles out there, but there's a lot as well that aren't, if you know what I mean. They're, like, Alex Newell is not transgender, but they've done a bit of an iffy job about whether the character is or not, but I think that we're meant to assume at this point that she is, but yeah, I don't know.
I think that's time for a Sokka line. It's really never made clear.
Yeah. Sorry Jack.
No, I say... I disagree with that Unique. I think it's just because I ended up being a really big fan of Unique, but I think, like, this is a bit off topic, but, like, throughout her progression in season 4, it got to a point where everyone in the Glee Club just accepted that she was, Unique was a woman.
Yeah.
Like, and that she identified herself as that persona, so that's it. And, like, that's examples of, like, how when there was girls versus boys competition, there was no question that Unique wouldn't be in the boys group, because she would be with the girls, and when they're doing the calendar, like, she's not going to be a boy posing for the calendar because she's a girl, you know. But and that's another thing that I saw on Tumblr, like, another opinion, only just quickly because I've been trying to avoid a bit of spoilers, but, like, it might be interesting to see that, like, we introduced Unique already with the preconceived idea that she identifies herself as a girl, or this, like, old, like, this other persona which is female.
Yeah.
Whereas it might be interesting, I don't know if Beast probably isn't the right formula or right method for this, but it probably would be interesting to see the transitioning from male to female, female to male on screen. Like, I don't
someone
know,
just, who
I
really, didn't already know that about themselves, you mean.
Exactly, yeah. And I really hope it's done well, but it's hard to say that it can be done.
I mean,
other things Glee's done. But...
people are all different, but the large majority of people that are transgender, the large majority of people who are, you know, diagnosed as transgender and been medically kind of approved to to transition because of the, you know, the complete sincerity of their state are people who have been like that the whole life. Like, no matter, you know, it might have been that that was like pushed away from them. Like, it might have been that they weren't allowed to express it, but that they've known like what was wrong, like what felt wrong their whole life. Whereas Beast, we really, unless she's lying to Will or lying to herself, we would be getting the impression that, you know, she would just be only kind of thinking about it for the first time now. Or given that what she said here, you know, that, you know, back when she was in school and that, you know, she's, you know, how she felt about being a girl, like, you know, of course it's a big thing to just like say to some random like Will, but it's definitely something that starts in childhood, like that it's really born, something born with generally, people who just feel like transitioning later in life, like, because they just make that choice. Generally, that's not really, they wouldn't, people in that circumstance aren't often, you know, not that the doctor is the be all and end all of who makes the laws about who's transgender, but that people who make that choice because they just, they've decided that they want that now, it's less likely to sort of be, approved and medically able to transition that's, than someone that is really known about it from childhood, even though lots of people only obviously make the transition when they're older, when they're able to face up to it. Just Beast, from what we know about her, doesn't ever have had to have seem to have these issues before, if you know what I mean. It seems to, from the very little we know about it, seems to be a completely new idea, or if it isn't a new idea, it's a very opposing idea to what we know about her already. But, I mean, who knows what secrets there are, really, but I don't know, it just seems, yeah, as I said, the whole thing is, it rubs me the wrong way as well, so I don't really know about that.
I'm all in favor of having more transgender representation. I think that's wonderful, and I'm completely in favor of it. I think choosing Beast to be the avenue is the wrong choice.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of my, some of.
And I don't know if there's any characters on Glee that would, you know, potentially work for that, if you know what I mean, potentially. Like, if it would have to be a new character, I don't know if there's any existing characters on Glee that would,
well,
you know, work for that. But
I think I mean, I don't want to put my foot in my mouth because I'm honestly not that informed on like the specifics of like transgender and things like that.
Mm.
But like, I think Unique, and I'm sorry in advance if I offend anybody, but like, I think Unique might be a good form for that, as you were, just based on what you were saying, Natalie, how like you've got to be born with this idea that you're not comfortable like with your gender. And that's what seems like Unique has been. So
yeah,
even though she identifies herself as a woman, if she was to then take that next step and say, I'm going to transition, like biologically, physically into a woman,
yeah,
I think that might make more sense, in my opinion.
Yeah, if they asked if she could start going on, like, hormones and stuff like that, because they do start kids on that at 15, 16. There's even people starting it on kids before puberty, if they know, if the kid knows and the parents know. Like, if they're very, a lot of people don't know anything about it because they're, you know, they don't know that there's another option. They might feel wrong their whole life, but they don't know that there's another option. So it's not till they're, like, older that they're like, oh, hang on, this is what this is. For people that are aware of it, that, you know, and it's a controversial issue, but there are definitely parents and kids sort of working together before puberty to have the child start transitioning basically really young, like, so pretty much to help their puberty go in the direction that they want to transition to, which is a massively controversial issue about whether that's like right or wrong, but it is something that people are looking into at the moment. So yeah,
that's so really interesting perspective. I didn't know that that was something that happened before puberty. It makes sense, but I don't know the you know, medical ramifications of doing that. I don't know. I just kind of opened up my mind to a whole other topic I didn't ever familiarize myself with before. So
I mean, the main point,
I'll have to do some research about that actually, because now I'm just curious.
The main point is that Unique is 100% like an age where they do they would medicate for transitioning if she was with the right doctor or you know, diagnosed the way that she felt. That would, they definitely, like, 16, 17, 18, they definitely start people transitioning if they know that that is actually, you know, a sure thing for them.
And I like, it's hard to comment on how they're going to do it, because obviously we haven't seen it yet, but like thinking now, if the reason why they wanted to do this storyline, which it seems like it is, like they just wanted to show this storyline on their TV show, like I'm talking about the creators and stuff, but they thought Beast might be a good way to do it. However, that seems like it's the only reason why they're doing it, is because if they thought that this was going to be where Beast would end up, they would give signs and hints, like now, in this episode now, saying that she isn't comfortable being a female.
Yeah.
But so therefore, if they had this idea where they wanted just to show this plotline on TV, why didn't they use Unique and justify everything they've shown us already to say this is what she's going to be doing, you know?
I don't know. So, I mean, maybe this plotline will end up working really well. Maybe it'll be like, maybe it'll actually be more of Unique's story, and Beast will be like, maybe that is something, I've never thought much about that. Maybe this explains something about me, and then we'll realize no, but like Unique, yes, if you know what I mean, it'll be more solid on both parts, but who knows? It's going to be a touch-and-go one, probably. The next sort of big plot, these couple of episodes are pretty big, but the next big plot, sort of two aspects that tie into each other, but we'll try and split up the, like, happy with the trauma. We'll try and keep them a bit separate, is the introduction of Blaine and Dalton Academy, and also Kurt's plot with Karofsky, and the bullying. And so those two things definitely end up merging together, but we'll talk about them separately first. So obviously this episode is the first introduction of Blaine as the, you know, and the Warblers at Dalton. And this was, you know, one of the biggest moments, if not the biggest moment on television that year, I would say. Like, no joke, it rocked some boats, but yeah, the performance of Teenage Dream was released online before the episode came out, and it had people go absolutely mental, basically, and it was just such a huge deal for so many reasons, both people just loving the performance and also, like, what it, you know, what it meant or what it could mean. But if we just go through point by point, obviously we have some people here who are big Blaine fans. Jack is not such a fan. Mitch is sort of a bit...
Not anymore, but we can talk about that.
Okay. But yeah, first of all, so the first big gigantic moment of, Kurt going to Dalton to spy and going down the stairs and meeting Blaine. I'm going to try and not go through this, like, literally second by second or anything like that, but Caitlin, do you want to sort of tell us how this kind of episode was for you in this in this scene?
I mean, this is one of the episodes I rewatch regularly. Aww. So because I love Blaine, as we all know. I don't know, I just love him. So it's hard to say just what it is, like, I'll say in my favorite scenes later, but it's just, he's so charming from the beginning, and I just love him.
Mm-hmm. This was a moment of pretty massive anticipation for me, because I certainly already was very familiar with Darren, and this was very, like, you know, weird, if you know what I mean. But then a lot of people obviously also were not, and it didn't seem to just be, oh, this guy already has his own, like, weird fans coming to Glee. It was definitely the Blaine and the Warblers definitely caused a pretty huge ruckus in the entire pop culture world at that time. It was pretty humongous. So yeah, so, Jack, what did you initially think of the Blaine introduction and that entire thing, the phenomena, I suppose?
All right, so I know that, like, it comes across a lot, especially, like, recording seasons 5 and whatever, I don't like Blaine. I don't like how the character progressed, especially, I guess, probably mid-season 3 onwards. I think the point where Matt Bomer, his brother, came in sort of was the turning point for me. But up until there, I really, really, really liked this character, because I think that the character of Blaine at this point and how he's introduced to Kurt had so much, like, better potential than how it was executed. But nonetheless, like, I think the reason why Blaine was, like, pretty much my favorite when he was first introduced was because, like, at the time, I wasn't, like, I sort of was watching Glee, but I was not, like, like properly watching it. I was sort of like, it was everywhere, so I was like, knew what was going on. I saw episodes here or there, and I think because like it was maybe I was maybe like 15, 16, so I knew I was gay, but I wasn't out or anything. So it really meant a lot for me personally to see a character like this on TV helping out another character who was struggling with being gay, and seeing on TV how confident there was like a gay man like being shown. And I think that was probably a very similar for a lot of other people who would have been in my situation. And like, yeah, so that's the reason why I really liked Blaine. And when he was talking to Kurt, like in the, like one of the first scenes, like when Wes and David and that left,
yeah,
I was just imagining, nothing else had happened yet. And it was really enjoyable. So I was thinking, like, the character in my mind,
you're ignoring the rest of it. I was ignoring
everything else. And like, this is a beautiful scene. I love him. And then I remembered, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's where I stand on it.
I mean, that's something certainly to be debated, because, you know, a lot of people still like Blaine now, though he certainly has some faults. But the main question is, like, what can we tell about Blaine from just this episode? Like, there's a lot of things that Blaine was a character that had a lot of, I don't know if it was just because of the fan attention or it was because of the portrayal, but a lot of depth given to immediately, like at least in kind of behind the scenes, like in the fandom, you know, people could made a lot of assumptions, which a lot of them ended up being correct assumptions, like stuff that came out on the screen, but a lot of assumptions about what Blaine was like who he, you know, what his background was, what his personality was like, all those kind of little things. So yeah, basically, you know, and some of those things change, like his kind of, you know, histrionics and competitiveness with Kurt, is not something I would have ever predicted from this episode, but I don't think it's unfitting for the character. But you know, some of the things we see is he kind of like, he meets Kurt and he kind of, you know, he's not too forthcoming about, you know, being in the Warblers, and he sort of brings Kurt along, and then, you know, it's like, oh, actually I'm singing, I'm showing off, if you know what I mean. And then you obviously have him giving that kind of advice to Kurt, and being there, being very cool, very kind of almost like sassy in some moments, but very, very kind of laid back. And laid back is not a word I'd usually describe Blaine with, at least not current Blaine, you know what I mean? But he is. And one of the things that they definitely seem to have changed just for convenience was his age. He was originally, again, I don't know if this is something that they confirmed, like, you know, if Ryan Murphy confirmed it or if Darren Criss confirmed it, but it was certainly confirmed by someone that Blaine was like a bit, he was like an older and wiser. People assumed he was like the year above Kurt at school, if you know what I mean, because, if we're looking at this, you know, this episode, he would only be a sophomore from what we know about him now. Whereas people thought he was meant to be a little bit older than Kurt, at least because he's experienced, you know, different things. One of the ways people sort of hand-waved that away is that he repeated the year, like that he is Kurt's age, but he's done an extra year at school because he doubled back after leaving his old school. Basically, like at Dalton, he restarted the same school year the next year, and there's all sorts of theories about why, if, you know, if he was really badly beaten up and he was like out of school for, anyway, but this is all fan speculation. So, yeah, just basically, what can we tell about Blaine from this episode? Like, what did you take from this character from meeting him immediately? Like, Jack, you sort of mentioned how much it meant to you. But like, what did you actually take about him as his personality, and what do you think's changed?
I think, like what I said, how much it meant to me, I think, and like how he is now, I think his biggest trait is confidence. Mm. And I definitely think that does waver a lot when he's with Kurt.
Oh, so much. So much.
Yeah. Like, even if you just take the plot line in season 5 about how he was so upset about how, in this point of the show, like right now, he is confident and he is almost got more power and he feels like he can protect Kurt. And now that he feels like he hasn't got that person to protect, he gets really upset about it and then goes downhill a bit. So I think, yeah, biggest thing right now is confidence, and that's what also made it seem like he was older as well. Like, even just looking at him and how he talks and how he presents himself, he looks older than Kurt. And when I've seen those two together, he looks older. Yeah. So, yeah, so I think biggest thing is confidence for me.
Yeah. Mitch, how about you? What did you sort of take from Blaine for the first episode? Were you a fan? Were you not a fan immediately?
Well, like, I had polar opposite interpretations this time around that I'm not even sure I can mimic from my original watching of this show. And I'll explain that. I really am confused, I guess is the best way of putting it, when he grabs Kurt's hand and they run in slow motion, what that was meant to be. If maybe this wasn't meant to be the epic romance that it turns into, what was that? I don't know. But then I personally fall in love with Darren Criss when he sings Teenage Dream. And it's not because of Darren Criss. It is because the mix that they have is not the studio mix that I'm used to. So that is a completely unique perspective that I will only ever be able to get being as detached from this first viewing as I am right now. I couldn't get enough of the edits that they had. They were perfect. The way the song starts off, it was the perfect length. And it's obviously, to me, it's better than the real Katy Perry version by far.
Oh, yeah. I hear the Katy Perry version. I'm like, what is this bullshit Glee cover song?
Well, I'm saying specifically like this, the edit within this episode, the show edit.
I like the full length, but I'm not sure. I mean, it was really well done as a Glee scene with the edit, but I do like the full length Glee version.
Oh yeah, not to say that that's not fabulous too, but I find that there's little moments where it's hard to describe it without seeing it, where the warblers will kind of like. You know how a band like Pentatonix and another a cappella group will kind of do like the moment where they all kind of make their voices decrescendo and crescendo really quickly? They have one of those moments in this Teenage Dream that isn't in the soundtrack version, and it works so well with like their choreography and the way that Blaine like looked up at the camera and did like a little like kind of like shoulder thing that he does. And I was like, oh yeah, this is cute. I love it. He's swooning, making me swoon over here. It was fantastic. So those are my two complex. Odd feelings about what's going on with Blaine. Why is he so flirty from the beginning, and then why is he so dreamy?
Yeah, like with that, I think that like definitely his involvement with the Warblers and seeing the Warblers and it being Darren Criss all, I think helped for everyone to like why the reason this made such an impact on the show. And I think it's because it is really like, other than Vocal Adrenaline, like it's just another expansion of the Glee world that we hadn't got yet. So it's like, it's all just excitement, and there's this character who's like this, and it's Darren Criss, you know, it's just all...
And people
all, like, everything
really
happening
liked
at once,
the so. Sound, like, people really liked the sound of those a cappella songs, they really did so well, all of them.
Because they're all so good, like, there's never, the only, like, Warbler song that I don't like is Live While We're Young, and every other than that, every other Warbler song is great, like, I don't have one that I'm like, ugh. No,
yeah,
great.
I am so...
Even Candles is not that terrible.
Candles is the worst.
Jack, how could you give that song any credence? That's like...
We're not going to talk about that, but that's not even a proper, like, Warblers song. That's a terrible duet, and it's terrible because the people singing it are not meant to be in love, and it's an obvious prediction of, like, how discordant they are with each other. Anyway...
That they sing non-love songs to be a love song?
Well, no, also because they sound so... and terrible. But okay, we'll not talk about that yet, because I actually, like, I don't think I've ever shipped anything harder than I shipped Klain in like the episodes between this and the end of season two. It died for me at the end of season two. It died for me the second that Kurt, we'll get to it, but Kurt said I like the Blaine says I love you, and Kurt looks horrified. It ended there. Like, he was like, oh, this got too real. Can't deal with it. Basically, that's when I lost it for it. And then I lost it immediately. And I was like, maybe I'm misinterpreting that. And then in the season three premiere, obviously, we had the transfer thing, which I was like, this is messed up. But
transfer.
Between right now and the end of season two, I've never shipped anything harder than I've shipped this pairing. And so I'm trying to, you know, relive that in a way and just see kind of what was there. And basically... Caitlin, first of all, I wanted to ask you again, like, what did you take from Blaine in this episode? But I also want to ask, looking back, what we think about the Klain, like, you know, the Kurt and Blaine situation immediately. But yeah, Caitlin, first of all, like, yeah, just how was falling in love with Blaine for you in this episode?
I would echo Jack in that the one word that I really take away is his confidence. Like, that's really what you get from him. He's the showy, show-off leading man, and he's wise and offering advice, which may not be very good advice, but at least he's trying. Yeah. And I don't know, just confidence for him. So it's just, it's so nice to see.
It's so like nice to see him like this, confidence. Like happy and secure, Caitlin. As opposed
well,
to, like,
and also, like, most of the characters on this show are, like, so torn down most of the time that it's like there's someone
there.
Like
Give
happy
time.
On the screen.
Give him time, Caitlin. Yeah, he'll be exactly. torn down. Don't worry. But yeah. Sorry,
I think the reason. Yeah, I think the reason why, like, also a lot of people thought that, like, he had a lot more potential than, like, what was lived up to is because, like, he was so confident in this scene. And the only time it wavers is when he's sort of brief. There's a brief moment, in my opinion, when he's talking about his old school and his old experience. Just only just briefly. And that's the only time where he sort of shows a bit of more vulnerability. It's only, like, a two-second thing. But I think that's, for me, is why I thought, oh, this character could just go, like, so many, yeah. like, awesome places. And then it didn't really deliver. So, yeah.
Well, one thing they have never really done that well on, they've done a little bit of it with his, like, the Sadie Hawkins dance and Kurt forcing him to go to the prom and, oh, anyway.
That's what I'm talking about.
Kurt
yeah.
became unhealthy with Blaine so fast, but let's wait for that. But, yeah, we didn't ever really get the best amount of, like, backstory stuff for Blaine explored. They did a really, really good job of showing it was there. And, I don't know whether that was, like, the direction, if that was, like, just the actor, like, doing that, you know, like, on, you know, doing a little, like, giving emphasis to stuff that he thought was important. I don't know if it was, like, implied that they were meant to be doing that later. But people took a lot from Blaine's backstory that ended up being correct, like little bits that were hinted at that ended up sort of being confirmed at various points, but never really explored deeply about, like, what his family was like, you know, what his old school was like, what his, you know, past might have been like, and, you know, and why he came to Dalton, when he came to Dalton, like, you know, where he was before and all of those kind of things. So, yeah, I mean, as I said, it's so much like headcanon was built up about this character, and none of it has been disproved except for the fact that he's allegedly younger than Kurt, or at least in the year below him. I know Darren Criss recently said, like, for season six, he would like to, like, he was like, oh, I don't want to ask for anything specific, I've got to do so much, but I personally would have liked to see, like, his parents and his relationship with Blaine, his parents, which is something that could have been interesting, but yeah, I don't know, he was there was a lot to him very fast, like, people went absolutely mental for this character, and I don't think it was just because they were hankering for a boyfriend for Kurt, like, because at first they were like, no, he's, you know, Kurt just needs, you know, this will be Kurt's friend, if there is a boyfriend it'll be another character down the line, and then they got, like, bored and forgot to cast someone else or something, so they didn't, you know, they're like, we'll just stick him with this guy, I guess. Nah, it was partly due to the fan reaction, but the point is about Kurt and Blaine being together. They made this big song and dance. Oh, no, this isn't going to be the couple. You know, this is a healthy friendship. And, you know, but I don't know if that was the same kind of song and dance that they made about, oh, Idina Menzel isn't really Rachel's mom. She's another character. She's Shelby. She's going to teach at the school. Like, it's like, okay, she's also Rachel's mom, though. So, what I'm sort of asking in a roundabout way is, looking back at these scenes, we sort of know that Kurt kind of fell for Blaine immediately because, oh, my God, first gay guy I've met, he's cute, he's sung Katy Perry to me, I'm in love because I have no other options. But do we think Blaine fell for Kurt immediately? Like, when he sort of proposes, he kind of says something about, you know, like, oh, you know, my heart must have known what, like, my brain didn't or whatever. And we obviously see Blaine go through, you know, crushing on other people until they get together. But there is also a little bit of, like, he turns around and he sees Kurt and, like, kind of he stops. Like, he's taken aback pretty quickly. So do you guys think that it was purposely done or, you know, at least your mental, you know, mental canon that he fell for Kurt immediately in that stairs moment? Or do you think that that was sort of they decided to put them together later?
Yeah, I'm asking, were you talking about in Blackbird when he looks at Kurt?
No.
Or
I'm talking about the moment he first sees Blackbird is the moment where he knows that he likes Kurt. It's like, he's like, oh, this is what this is. But I'm talking about whether he fell for him immediately, because he claims that when he proposes, he claims that he fell for Kurt immediately in that moment on the stairs.
He didn't. No.
But I mean, they kind of say like, oh, you know, something in me knew. I didn't know it, but something in me knew because I grabbed this guy by the hand and I ran with him. And what was I doing? Like, this was all insane. Like, yes, it was. But I don't know. Like, there's a lot of debate about whether he was like you know, whether the, you know, either the actor or the direction by whoever was directing the episode was, you know, whether it was purposeful that he was a bit like, oh, this boy, but no, I can't have him, if you know what I mean. Or if it was, you know, only later that he really did start liking him like that. Caitlin, how did you take it?
I mean, I don't think he did. You can easily say that he was taken aback because Kurt was not wearing the uniform. He was wearing a very poor imitation of the Dalton uniform. So it was like, oh, he's a spy. Got it. Okay. So quickly kind of registers that. It was meant to,
fit it. I didn't think it was actually anywhere near enough to even justify that.
It was definitely meant to fit it enough to be like, oh, dark jacket, white shirt, red tie. Okay, I might not look twice at you. But when it's like a perfect school uniform, yes, you're going to notice anyone not wearing it. Like, you know.
Definitely.
But I think Blaine is just inherently flirty. So... And was just, he sees this kid who is clearly spying on the Warblers. So he kind of is playing it up like, yeah, rock stars, like trying to be as impressive as possible. I think he's just flirty and is a show off.
Do you think that that's why he's like, he does the whole like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll show you the Warblers. And then like doesn't tell him, he's not like, oh, yeah, we're going to, I'm in the Warblers. We're going to go sing right now. Do you want to come? Like, do you think that's why he puts on that whole performance? Because Kurt's a spy.
He's just cocky.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he thought he was cute, too, but I don't think he, like, fell for him. Like, you can see someone and be like, you're cute, I kind of want to show off, and then it's not really anything beyond that, so I could absolutely see him just being like, he's a cutie, okay.
We're gonna do this. He's a spy and he's cute, let's see what we can do here, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Wasn't he seeing that guy in The Gap at this point?
He liked him. He was never seeing him. They went for coffee, and then the guy was like, no, I'm a pedo. I can't do this. But anyway, we'll get to that. It's kind of
like 2 years older or something. Like 2 years older or something.
What episode is that in? I hope we get to record
Silly Love Songs. Yeah, that. Oh, that episode. It's interesting.
It is.
Oh, Blaine. But yeah, I suppose that's... Yeah, I'm not sure too much else what to say about Blaine except for his interactions with the Karofsky plot, which is going to come up in one moment. But, yeah, we also learn that Dalton is a zero-tolerance, no-bullying policy after Kurt asks, is this a gay school? Which is just, like, the stupidest sentence of all time. But, no, basically, you know, Blaine transferred to Dalton because he was, you know, he says, you know, taunted. We find out he was, like, beaten, like, and... hospitalized, you know, beaten around his head. But he transferred there because of gay, like, of homophobic bullying. Why are not all schools zero tolerance bullying? I don't understand why this is like a special thing.
I think all schools obviously are, but I think it's just more heavily enforced, like bullying. Like we saw in, we'll see in the next episode how, like, Karofsky didn't actually physically hurt Kurt yet, it was just threats. The threats are still bullying, but nothing on the school board could allow Karofsky to be expelled. I don't know if that's specifically what happens, but I think whereas in Dalton, it's like maybe that threats would just lead to expulsion. I don't know, but I think it's just more strict.
I was going to say, like, I seem to recall all the schools I ever went to were zero tolerance bullying, and it was just, they are. They're supposed to be, that...
But like, bullying is okay, like, no.
Yeah, like, I feel like the opposite to this is, like, yes, we are fine with bullying, if you know what I mean, and I just don't get that, so.
I think the enforcement is the important part.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, going in straight to the Kurt and Karofsky plot then in that case, because, you know, Kurt's sort of tied up in, you know, with this other plot, obviously, a lot more grave, that Karofsky is really turning... insane, like he's gone from, you know, just giving the Glee Club, you know, random shit with his football friends to targeting Kurt on his own really aggressively. Will kind of catches it happening, and he's kind of like, is there anything, you know, he can do? And I'm just like, yes, you can you know that he's getting physically assaulted, so why don't you do something about it? Will only pulls Kurt in when Kurt's behavior starts irritating him. When he's like, you've been sullen and belligerent, like, that's when Will does something, when Kurt's behavior starts irritating him, which may sound more terrible than it is, but it's seriously, maybe I'm just looking for ways to hate Will now, but it's true. I don't think Will, you know, that conversation between Will and Kurt is very good. Like, I think Will is terrible. So, yeah, Jack, did you have any thoughts about that, I suppose?
Yeah, I with Will, it makes it hard to seem like I hate him when I'm always, like, defending him in a way. But I do see where you're coming from, but I don't think he brought Kurt in just because he realized, just because it's irritating him.
No, I don't either, but still.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just not a great conversation. And, like, I just feel like, I don't know, like, it should have been doing more. Like, what?
I think he should have. Like, yeah. Especially as a teacher, like, mm-hmm. he's always with and stuff. He should be doing something more. And it shouldn't just be up to the principal to be taking action.
Yeah. Did he see Kurovsky push Kurt, or did you just see Kurt kind of, shocked afterwards?
Did he? I don't think he pushed. I don't think Kurovsky pushed Kurt yet.
I
think that's after, and that's when Kurt ran. Like, and then it happens in the locker.
No, he
does it pretty frequently.
A few times, like, he shoved him. He really few times, but yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. If Will did see him get pushed, then he should have done something.
Mm. Yeah. Obviously, Blaine. I'm just gonna sort of throw this in quickly. Blaine gives Kurt the advice. Stand up to Kurovsky, like, call him out, be like, hey, why are you doing this kind of thing? And Blaine takes that to heart and makes a creepy locker collage, which is so weird. But yeah. I'm sorry, but it is so weird. It's like,
it is weird.
Steal his school picture off the, like, Dalton website or something.
It was like, how did you get this picture? You've known him for 2 days.
Perfectly framed.
Did you ask him? Were you like, hey, can I have a picture of you to put in my locker so I can remember, like, not to, you know, like, to do what your texts say or something? It's so weird. But anyway, and I can't
believe I'm having photos of your friends. Like, if having photos of friends, like, is fine, like, just little, like, I'm looking at my wall now and I've got heaps of photos.
Yeah, totally.
Like, because there's a Mercedes photos in there, but, like, not, like, a perfectly framed school picture of
Blaine.
Courage.
And I remember, I'm sure I thought it was cute, or I'm sure some other people thought it was, like, I'm sure people in general thought it was cute at the time. Like, oh my god, he loves him already, and now I'm just like, oh my god, this is so weird. Like, it's so weird. Mitch, would you put a framed photo of a guy you just met in your locker to remind you to stand up to bullies? Is that a good tactic?
No, not in any aspect. That's not even, like, I don't know, like, I used to have a picture.
The way you said it, you're just like, no, of course I haven't done that.
That's no, what you said no, I'm then. Just thinking back to what I did. I used to put in my locker. I used to have stickers of Hannah Montana and High School Musical, specifically, all over my locker. And it was actually kind of cute, too, because I used to, like, I don't know. I loved Hannah Montana a lot, but for some reason it was just really fun seeing her with a drawn-on, you know, pencil mustache. So, like, it was just kind of a thing my friends would just kind of run on by and be like, oh, can I give her another one today? I'd be like, yeah, go right ahead, because I had so many.
Oh, my God.
So, like, it wasn't, like, a romantic thing, you know? It was just, like, cute celebrities on my locker for, like, fun, whatever, not, like, I creepily like what you do in your real life person to me.
It wasn't even like, that's the thing, it wasn't even like, oh, this is my boyfriend and I have a picture of my boyfriend from another school in my locker. That wouldn't be that weird. I mean, whatever, politics or whatever, but I have a picture of a guy that I just met a couple of days ago in my locker, and he's here because I'm obsessed with him, and it's kind of so weird. But
that's too much.
Anyway, the actual question is, you know, you kind of touched on this before, Caitlin, the advice that he gives to Kurt to call Kurovsky out, and you know, courage, stand up to him. Like, do you think that was, like, safe and healthy advice? Like, do you think that was, like, he should have given better advice, or do you think that's, like, a normal amount of advice for, like, someone in his position to give? What did you think of that, Caitlin, the whole advice situation from Blaine?
I think it's terrible advice, but because Blaine didn't know the full extent of the situation, I think it makes complete sense from his point of view, because it's this big regret that he has from his own experience, and he doesn't want Kurt to have that same kind of regret haunting him. But at the same time, he doesn't know the extent of how horrifying Kurofsky is. Yeah. So without knowing that, it became dangerous advice. But there was no way he could know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly.
And in the context, it was kind of dangerous advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's all derived from the fact that, like, Blaine's already said to Kurt that the school board did absolutely nothing. So, like if he tells Kurt, go to the school board, like, he doesn't want to because it didn't work for him. And all he knows how is to stand up for himself. And I think, like, maybe me initially watching would have been like, yeah, do it, Kurt. Like, you, like, go call him out. Like, call him out on his bullshit. And, like, but even though it's not the best, like, tactic, it still has that, like
hurrah, you know where, like, it's coming from. You know? Yeah, you know where it's coming from.
We find out later, too, that Blaine is a boxer, so he can stand up for himself.
Oh, my God, I forgot about that.
Beat up Kurofsky.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, going to that, like, there was obviously that, you know, Kurt does take that advice, ends up quite, you know, bravely, whether it's stupid or not, kind of being like, hey, what's your problem? And, like, following Kurofsky into the locker room, and he's all, you know, Kurofsky's just like, you know, don't push me, etc., and ends up, you know, they end up having this fight of screaming into each other's faces, and then Kurofsky kisses Kurt, which was absolutely, I don't mean, like, phenomenal in a good way, but, like, it's such a good scene. Like, both of
I don't think anybody saw it coming.
The acting from both of them is just, like, whether you like or, you know, dislike Kurofsky, obviously a lot of people dislike the character, some people have compassion for him. Regardless, Max Adler does this character so well. He's a very, very good actor. Chris Colf was obviously one of the show's best actors, and it was just, oh, I physically felt this. Like, I physically, this scene, I was like, the first time I ever watched this, I was like, I had a physical reaction, like, in my, I don't know, like, heart palpitations or, like, something in my throat. And then when he kissed him, I gasped so hard that it hurt my throat, that I roughed up my throat. Like, it was, and I don't mean to be melodramatic because I don't have those kind of reactions, like, watching television all the time. It was the most shocking and, like, moment probably I've ever seen on television. But I don't know, maybe some people saw it coming, but I certainly didn't. Jack, you said you didn't.
Oh, I don't remember. I definitely wouldn't have first watching, and even rewatching now, like, you're just so into the scene and so into it. My hands still went, like, over my mouth, and I did gasp again. Like,
yeah,
because, like you said, it's just such well acted, and it's like the scene is just so well done. Like, it's just fantastic that I was still, well, I wasn't surprised because I knew what happens, but in a way, you kind of are. You're like, oh crap, this happens. Yeah, it's great.
Mitch, how about you? The first time you watched this episode with this scene.
It's funny. It's like I can only remember Society's reaction and Glee Chat's reaction later on talking about it, but I cannot remember what I felt like watching this whatsoever. It's like everyone else's opinions have shoved their way in with, like, everything Klain, everything Kurt, everything Blaine, everything Kurofsky, to where I don't even feel like I have my own opinions on them anymore because there's so much flooding my mind with it all. It, you know, honestly, it kind of reminds me, especially Kurofsky, of, like, when there's when it's politics season, which I guess when isn't it, but, you know, like, just say before, like, the midterms that just happened in America, and it, you know, everyone just kind of, like, hashing it out against each other and giving their points for or against, to where I don't even have an opinion anymore, and I don't even have a reaction anymore, because it's just, to me, I just feel so detached. It's like I just stopped giving an opinion on it. So, I mean, as much as I feel that way about politics, from, like, you know, those slum campaigns where people kind of just, you know, make fun of each other and whatnot, that's how I feel about this Kurofsky stuff, if that makes sense.
Not really, but okay.
Oh, thanks, Natalie.
I don't quite follow, but yeah, so you basically don't remember how you felt about this at the time.
I mean, I'm sure I reacted drastically, but I mean, I was very, 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 very into every new episode of Glee when it was coming on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I must have, like, really freaked out, but I don't know. It's gone from my mind right now.
Caitlin, was this an episode that you saw new, if you know what I mean? Like, when you started watching Glee, did you know this was going to happen, or were you watching this sort of live and new when it came out?
I was watching live, so I started watching in season two, like when season two started. So I was watching live. I'm pretty sure I was shocked because how do you see that coming?
Yeah. It was, yeah, pretty insane, obviously. And I sort of note a little, I always note a little bit, and we're going to talk more in the FERT episode as well, but Karofsky is, like, clearly incredibly, like, awful, but also clearly incredibly troubled. Like, Kurt has to shove him, like, not only does Kurt shove him off, he goes back for more. Like, Karofsky seems to think that they're in this together in some way, and that really follows into the FERT episode, and it's, like, freaking messed up. It's messed up, but you see this, I'll talk about it more in the FERT, and it goes right through to, obviously, later on when Karofsky ends up having a crush on him and all sorts of stuff. But Karofsky thinks that they are in this together, and it is weird as shit. He's troubled and very disturbing, and the character is incredibly well done, but incredibly disturbing. And it's really.
I literally never thought about it that way, but that's a really good point.
You'll see what, like, when we talk about FERT, I'll tell you a bit more about that as well. But yeah, Karofsky, you know, despite he thinks that, yeah, this is what, you know, this is what's going on. I shove you around, but, you know, then we kiss. Like, he, like, obviously, he was pushed to it, or not pushed to it, he was pushed to it internally. But he really seems to think that him and Kurt share something. And it's creepy as shit. It is horrifying. But, yeah, we'll talk about that more in a moment in the next episode. Because, yeah, there is a bit more evidence of that there, and it's always really disturbed me. But I just want to finish up this episode with our quotes and all of that. Does anyone have anything else about either the Dalton or the... the last thing, I suppose, is the Blaine and Karofsky interaction, which is interesting considering what we know about season six. That little scene between Blaine and Kurt. Caitlin, tell us how you feel.
It's just knowing what's coming. I just went, uh-huh. Right.
I kind of forgot about it. I was, like, thinking about, like, you know how, like, with popular pairings and stuff, people make, like, fan videos with, like, little clips from them, like, you know, being together. I'm like, are people going to put clips of, like Karofsky shoving Blaine into, like, a metal fence, like, in, like, fan videos about their love? Like, it's like, oh, look at their first meeting. Like,
yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Imagine Whitney Houston singing I'll Always Love You, but right when he pushes him against the
knee.
Oh, my God. So awkward.
And, like, slow down shots of them, you know, both, like... Go ahead.
Glances.
God.
Yeah, they're gonna
as
be
I've
like...
said.
Go ahead, Natalie.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, as I've said, I really find this Blaine and Karofsky thing very implausible, because even though I don't want Kurt and Karofsky together, I have said before, I understand a person forgiving someone else for their kind of one-on-one interactions, and, you know, I don't understand a person's friends, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't understand Blaine ever forgiving Karofsky for the stuff that went down with Kurt. I understand Kurt forgiving it because sort of people get to make their own choices about it. But I think that like a friend, I just don't understand, like, moving on from, like, your boyfriend to the guy that, like, used to, like, threaten to kill him and, like, sexually harass him. I will never be okay, but we'll have to see how that plays out. I really liked Blaine in this scene. I liked that he was, like, mildly condescending. He was kind of like, Kurt told me what you did. And, like, he wanted to help, but he was also being, like, it wasn't earnest. It wasn't, like, it was, like, yeah, you're a dick. You're really awful. And, you know, yes, you clearly need some help, but also I'm being really condescending to you. And I kind of loved that. I love Blaine being like that, even though it's kind of a bad trait in people, I suppose. But, yeah, I was just mainly thinking about, this is Blaine and Karofsky's first meeting. How romantic. So, yeah, cool. That's going to be good. The last bit of this episode is the Puck and Artie plot, which is pretty side, you know, it's not that important, honestly, except to just mention a couple of things about, it's sort of there for comedic value. The plot of Puck, you know, recovering from juvie and kind of lying about what it was like and then having a bit of like an outburst / breakdown about it. That was kind of really well done, I thought, for the character, though. I just don't know about, you know, how necessary this plot was in this episode. Like, if it was gone, like, there could have been a lot more time given to a couple of other plots that could have been, you know, more fleshed out, and that would have been interesting to me. But my main thing about this was, how fickle is this school about whether they like or hate music? Like, they do busking and people give them $300, and then sometimes people throw food at them. I don't understand. Like, it's just so weird. And I just wish they would make up their mind. What I really want, and it just made me start thinking, I want an episode of season 6 that is told from the perspective of another student who is not in the Glee Club. Not someone we know, not like Jacob Ben Israel narrating, someone who is a guest star who has never been on the show before. They're a McKinley student, and they just go about their week, like, witnessing the insanity of the Glee Club from the outside, and, like, the whole school being like, yeah, those people are weird. We don't, like, yeah, if you know what I mean. Because I just don't get it. I just don't get, like, why sometimes the school's like, yeah, here's $300 because you're busking. And then sometimes they're like, we're going to throw food at you and stuff like that. So, I don't know. Anyone got any thoughts about the Puck plot line or why this school is so, like, fickle about whether they love or hate pop music?
I do agree with you, Natalie. You're right. It's fickle. It's like some days they're throwing slushies at their faces even though they've won the national championship. Or then, you know, the next episode they're cheering them on and dancing along in the courtyard. It just, it's always been weird. And this is, I think, a prime example of a time that is extremely weird. I mean, I don't know. Like, if someone did that in my school, obviously I wouldn't just give them money. I mean, do you busk in a high school? No, that's not something you do. It's like, that's not a thing. I don't know. It's like they're not on the city streets of New York or something, right? They're in the middle of Lima, Ohio. Woo. Do these people even know what busking is?
I assume so, but it is weird. And yeah, this plot just felt a little bit out of place in this episode. I understand they had to sort of address Puck's absence, and I actually did like some of those aspects, but I don't know, like, what would have you guys added more to if this plot wasn't in the episode? Caitlin, would have you sort of added, what, just more Blaine in general? Or what would have you sort of added in more? If you took out this plot.
Yeah, always more Blaine in general. I want to see, like, the conversation where they invite Kurt back, because it's clearly a different
day.
Because he's in a different outfit. Yeah. So, like, Kurt getting, like, a text or something and being like, come for coffee. And he's like, oh, God, they're going to beat me up or something.
Oh, yeah. I did love Wes being like, we're not going to beat you up. Like, those warblers became big favorites of people, all of the, like, one-line warblers. Like, yeah. But, Jack, how about you? What would have you given more time to in this episode?
I really liked the Puck and Artie stuff, but only because I really, like, I've said before, one of my favorite aspects of this show is seeing friendships that, like, aren't, like, usual friendships, and Puck and Artie, looking at them, aren't people who would be friends right away. So I really did enjoy seeing that. If I was to add something to that plot, it would be a bit more of Puck addressing the problems that he had with, like, just a bit more continuity with Beth and Quinn, even though we don't get any of that in season 2, really. But
yeah,
I would have liked to see a little bit more.
Yeah,
why he did it, and more explanation.
I personally probably, if we were going to keep this plot, I would have probably given a little bit more time to Santana, because she was hilarious. But she's, and this is, again, something that continues on over the next couple of episodes, but she's clearly, like, overcompensating. She's clearly finding any possible way to be straight, if you know what I mean. And it's really, like, you know, like, she's got those fantastic lines, like, you know, you should be our nation's president, and, like, her and Brittany reacting to when Artie and Puck asked them out and stuff. But I feel like it's not, like, it doesn't make sense for it to be genuine, if you know what I mean. Like, from what we know about where Santana's at the moment, it doesn't make sense for that to be genuine coming from her. And I feel like she's kind of, like, you know, grasping at as many straws possible, if you know what I mean, to try and you know, have a boyfriend or be straight in some way. And I don't know, if it is just you know, oh, no, this is still what we do. We go out on dates with boys and, like, we're just sort of ignoring the Britney thing. I think that's a little bit lazy, or a little bit sort of pick and choose about when they have issues. So I probably would have given a little bit of time to that, but I don't know. Mitch, how about you? Were you okay with the Puck and Artie storyline?
Yeah, no, I didn't have any opposition. I liked the development of Artie when he pays for the dinner, and I don't like the way that that like even Artie, when he's like, you know, the waitress has a crush on me, and then you know, Puck and everyone are just treating that waitress. That makes me feel horrible. It just you would think that they would be a little bit more of accepting of like all types of people in general, not to just, you know, generalize someone by their age or their occupation. But you know, it's kind of just like, oh, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. She'll get money from other people. And I mean, thank God Artie was smart enough to say like she probably has you know, kids and stuff. So I mean, like, I thought that that all fit in nicely to develop Artie, round him out some more, because I always appreciate more Artie in a way that I feel he doesn't get too many A plots. This isn't an A plot, but it's, you know, the best we're gonna get.
Yeah. Okay, just quickly, let's go through our favorite moments and quotes in the episode. So do you want to just go down the order? Jack, what was your favorite sort of moment aspect of this episode?
I've already spoken a bit about my favorite moment, but I think it really is like seeing Blaine and my ignoring of what I know will happen later on with Blaine and enjoying how I once viewed this character and sort of remembering how I felt like what it would have been good for. Like for him to like progress into. So that was mine.
Okay, Caitlin, how about you?
I just picked Teenage Dream because it's it's Wolf Blaine's first song, and it's also one of the most played songs in my iTunes. So it's love
pretty,
it.
It's pretty gorgeous. Yeah, it was pretty overwhelming. Mine, I mean, so many things like that scene, the Kurovsky and Kurt kiss scene, because it was incredibly affecting. They were so good. But my favorite little thing was Quinn's reactions to things in this episode. She has some great, like, just in the background little moments of, like, first of all, when Sam, like, when they're doing the thing and she's kind of like, ugh, about Sam saying beast. Then when she kind of gives a weird look to, she gives a really weird look to Santana later on as well, when Santana's like, yes, I'll go on a date with you. You should be our nation's president. Or whatever it was. And there was something else as well later on that she just gave these incredibly, like, what is wrong with you reaction faces, like, three or four times during the episode, and I enjoyed it a lot in the background. But, yeah. Mitch, what was your favorite moment?
I had one specific moment from the mashup, Start Me Up, Living on a Prayer. It was the hair. They were just flinging around in the best fashion I've seen them do since the episode that was based all off of that exact movement. But it was fun. It was really cool. And
yeah.
And it's right. It does distract you from the performance that you don't even notice if they're dancing or not, because there's so much action going on. And it made me feel like everyone was a really professional dancer and they had a good rock mode going on. It was just that vibe from them flinging that around was, I guess that you can call that choreography. That choreography was just fun to me. And then, of course, yeah, I just kind of include Teenage Dream with that because the studio version is different, as I mentioned. But what were you saying, Natalie?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, my friend that I watched this with back in the day, you know, because we didn't find out this mashup who won, that plot just went out the window, whatever. And, yeah, she was like, yeah, clearly oh, yeah. The girls won. She was like, clearly the girls won. Because clearly, like, because last year the boys wore leather and sung Bon Jovi, and this year the girls, she was like, whoever wears leather and sings Bon Jovi, that's who has to win, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and the boys sing like, a lame song. Bon Jovi's the best.
I'm fine with that.
No, I loved the boys mashup was amazing. That back in the day, I'm talking about the It's My Life Confessions mashup.
Oh, okay, I thought you were talking about Stop in the Name of Love and that. No, I love Stop Me Up Living on a Prayer. Like, it's so badass, and I'm a very big fan of Bon Jovi. It's so good. Like, it's so good.
I like to imagine that there's, like, this large dungeon of Glee thrown-out plots, even within episodes that, like, contain the lead-ups to them, including who won this mashup and things like, you know, what happened to Joe and Sugar, for instance, or things like that, you know, Ryder actually cared who his catfish was and that he was quitting Glee Club. Like, there's all these they're just rotting down in this dungeon, reaching up to be saved again, and maybe Ryan will just come down and pick one up again and place it down into season 6 and be like, yes, we've saved it, we've resurrected it, and we didn't forget it. But I mean, I think I'm thinking a little bit too hopeful there, because these things just, they happen too often.
Oh, we'll see. How about quotes?
So my favorite one is Beast, because even though there was a lot of drama, she's just got the best, like, comedic timing. And so it's when Quinn, when they're fighting about, you know, Quinn's like, this is a love of quarrels and it's your fault. And then right away, Beast, like, no hesitation, goes, What's your turn with me, Missy? You're crapping my leg. I'll cut it off.
Oh, my God.
It's so funny because it makes no sense. And then everyone, like, Quinn looks at her like, what the hell? And it's just so funny. Beast jokes like that make me laugh. Like, she's got a few of them, and I love it so much.
Caitlin, how about you?
Mine is from the beginning of the episode when Sam and Finn are having their really awkward conversation in the bathtubs, too, or the tubs in the training room, and Finn's talking about how he cools down and saying Sam needs his own way, and Sam goes, I've never actually almost killed a civil servant before.
Like, oh my God, I wrote that one down as well because lol.
Just the phrasing is so funny.
Lol. But yeah, mine was actually Blaine's from that Kurovsky altercation after he kind of like, you know, Kurovsky like lumps off or whatever he does after he kind of has a go at them both. And I just like that Blaine, he kind of just leans back on the fence and is like, well, he's not coming out anytime soon. I just loved it. Like, it's just the, like, where did this Blaine go? I do still love him, but this kind of like sass slash, just, he's just so chill. Like, he's just like, yeah. Like, he's unflappable. He's unflappable. Yeah. And I just, and like, and as I said, like, a little bit condescending and completely just, I just love it so much. I totally forgot about this line and I laughed out loud really, really, really hard when it happened. And so, yeah, it was my favorite. So, yeah. But yeah, Mitch, how about you?
I couldn't pick between the two, and one is when Will is coming up with some bullshit in the classroom, and he says, now, I'm not tossing the baby out with the water here, and then Brittany goes, oh yeah, I've totally done that, which always makes me think. And I'll leave yeah. that, I'll leave all alien probation theories aside for now. And then the other one that I couldn't give up was Santana's referencing everyone using Beast to cool off, and then she just goes, if everyone just put out, we'd have a winning football team by now.
She's like, duh, this is logic.
Yeah, she's great.
Oh, dear. Okay, I'm going to, we'll go into the next one. I suppose the songs for this episode were, as we've said, One Love, People Get Ready, Teenage Dream, Living on a Prayer / Start Me Up, and Stop in the Name of Love / Free Your Mind. Does anyone have any points about those numbers that we haven't already kind of mentioned? Because the songs, Teenage Dream was certainly a big part of the episode that we've already discussed, and the mashups sort of did come into the plot. But yeah, did anyone have anything else further to say about those quickly?
Just yeah. In general, I appreciated how, like, the songs weren't a focal point, and because this was such a heavy, like, plot episode, they were just a nice break from the plot just to relax, chill out, enjoy it, and then get back into it.
Yeah.
And I like when songs are used in that manner as well as other ways as well. So I enjoyed that. And I love the girls mashup. It's one of my favorite mashups. So.
Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah, I certainly agree. I kind of like it when the songs don't really affect the plot.
Well, speaking of the one that, no, not just the one, but speaking of the final one that was supposed to be like the climax of the whole episode where it's Stop in the Name of Love and Free Your Mind, how is that supposed to make Beast feel any better about herself? What does that have? I mean, Free Your Mind, kind of. Like, love all and accept all and whatever. But Stop in the Name of Love. I don't even know what that song means initially, but I know it doesn't apply to this whole Beast situation of, like, to cool off.
I mean, I don't think it was meant to be spelling it out. It was just, here's a performance that we're doing and dedicating to you. It wasn't, like, them singing their feelings through song. So, yeah.
Because it's odd enough that I would think this and you think that I would stop myself from saying it because I know I'm going to get it flack, but I'll say it anyways. I thought that this was the moment where they're going to sing, do you know what it feels like for a girl? I don't know why. I thought that was the moment, and I was really excited for it, and then I realized I was terribly wrong.
It already happened.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. I just meshed up where I was thinking it was going to happen. But, you know, no, I didn't like that mashup for the making up to Beast stuff. It just didn't make any sense to me.
I think it was just a song they were already preparing to do, and like they were like, "Come, we want to sing a song for you." And it's a song about, you know, being women or whatever. I don't know. I don't know if it's that important what the song was. As I said, the songs aren't really about the plot in this episode. So, episode 208 is Furt, and this has has a few major points. Obviously, the big part is focusing around Bert and Carol's wedding, and there's a few plots that end up tying into that, which we will talk about. But I wanted to tie straight into the Kurt and Kurovsky situation, which does continue on in a really serious way in this episode, basically despite all of the wedding joy going on. And as I mentioned in the past episode, Kurovsky is becoming really creepy and weird. Like, he thinks that Kurt and him have a thing. I don't know what it is. Like, his torture isn't like, it's not just like, oh, I'm bullying you because I'm angry that I kissed you or whatever. It's like they think, he thinks something weird is going on. I don't know what, but like, you know, he obviously goes up to him and he takes that cake topper, which is like just horrifically weird and creepy. But towards the end, this is kind of jumping right ahead, but I just wanted to kind of tie in this aspect. Towards the end, when he's in that meeting, you know, with Kurovsky's father and Kurt and Bert and the principal, which is Sue at the moment for a reason that I can't even remember, Kurt sort of says what was going on, and he covers up the kiss, but he kind of tells everything else. And Kurovsky, you know, tries to make out that it's made up or whatever. But as he leaves, he kind of looks down at Kurt and he kind of just shakes. He kind of looks him in the eye and kind of shakes his head. And to me, that wasn't even just like a threatening. That wasn't like, hey, you're going to get it. That was like, how could you do this to me? Why have you done this? And it just, I don't know if that's just me that took that like that. But to me, it always felt like that. It always felt like Kurovsky was being like, hey, we have this thing. Shut up. Like, what are you doing? Like, shut up. Like, I don't understand why you're ruining this. And it's so messed up. It's so messed up. And I think that given what happens in future with Kurovsky and Kurt, this is what was going on. And it's just so creepy and weird that it makes me uncomfortable. But yeah, is that something that anyone else sort of noticed / interpreted at all? Or am I just sort of overdoing things again?
I didn't, like I said before, I didn't see it that way, and I definitely see aspects of what you're talking about, so I don't think it's like a stretch to think that's what Kurovsky is thinking.
Yeah. So basically, you know, we have the plot of, you know, Kurovsky doing these weird things, Kurt and Sue, Sue and Kurt and Bert having a meeting about it with Will. And the group of girls enlisting their boyfriends on the football team, to tell Kurovsky, you know, to back off. And then Finn, you know, is like, oh no, I can't be involved. I can't let this happen. So yeah. What did you guys think of sort of Finn, reacting like this in this episode? Do you think that he needed to go that far in order to come up? Like, do you think he needed to go that far down in order to come up to what he does at the end of the episode, or do you think you still would have been okay with him, you know, not being like, oh no, I can't defend Kurt because I'm popular?
Basically, what you're asking is, Finn should have risen up and like physically protected Kurt throughout this episode, like he didn't?
Well, no, I'm not asking that. I think that's not up for debate. I think that it's very much shown that, you know, Finn was uncool about what he did. I'm not asking whether he should or shouldn't have done that. I'm asking whether the episode would have been as emotionally affecting as it was if Finn had risen up, you know, because of what he does at the end, what his speech and stuff like that at the end.
Yeah.
Would this episode still have worked if Finn hadn't been a douchebag at the start, basically?
Well, maybe I'm missing the part where Finn was being a douchebag. My problem actually with this plot is different from what you're bringing up. It's that Bert has that speech where he's like, why aren't you protecting your brother? And then he does the speech in the end where he's like, you're really cool, and he sings them the song and stuff. That doesn't seem to redeem what Bert had going on. It's like those were two different issues. Like, yeah, Finn, it's cool that you accept Kurt and you're singing him the song, but that doesn't solve the fact that you didn't really stand up for him. So it already was. Yes, I agree that, Natalie, maybe it would have been more emotional if Finn wasn't being such a jerk, if I could be reminded of when he was, though.
Everyone was, like, making him out to be, like, a terrible person. Mm. Like, that. Like, they were saying that, like, it really, it kind of bothered me a bit. Like, it was,
yeah.
Like, when,
when they went to go, like when they went to go confront Kroska, so the other boys, and then afterwards in the choir room scene, they're like, Finn, you should have been there. Like, why weren't you there? And he says that he was still out on the field doing laps. I believe Finn when he's saying that.
Yeah.
Everyone still gives him.
He did kind of do a shady. I don't know. I don't know whether I believe him or not. But he did kind of go like, "Hey, I wasn't there." Like he kind of. It wasn't that. The delivery wasn't that genuine. It was.
I always thought that he was telling the truth. But like even before that, like people were just like telling him he needs to be a leader, and I don't think he's comfortable in doing that. So to answer sort of what you asked before, Natalie, I think yes, it is necessary for him to have such this, like, start off at a low level or be knocked down so far in order for him to be built up. Because that's a lot of what happens to Finn, and it makes him grow a lot. So I answer yes to your question.
Caitlin, how about you and sort of Finn's choices in this episode? And the girls' pressure, I suppose. Do you think that was, like, right or wrong of them?
I get where they're coming from. I don't think the way they went about it was very good. I think the show has a really weird relationship, like, with quote-unquote what it means to be a man.
And I know, it's, I was like, bring that up as well, yeah.
Really shoved onto Finn very hard, and it, in a lot of ways, is very uncomfortable. So here are the cases. To be a man, you have to go beat someone up, because yeah, the only thing he's going to listen to is fists, when really all it's going to do is make him hate you back. So I don't really see that being a...
Well, Quinn kind of points that out. She's like, wow, in that sentence you've set back, you know, the entirety of feminism 50 years or whatever it is that she says.
Yeah, but Caitlin, I'm glad you brought that up, because I always think that with this show, like, in every single season, there's at least, like, three or four characters that always say, now I know what it's like to be a man. Like, I want the show to define, tell me, what do they think being a man means? Like, because they just say it, and it's like, great, you're saying it, but what does it actually mean? Like, what does it mean to be a man in your eyes, you know?
Yeah, I have no idea. Like, it's... They really seem to like that, like, you know, reinforcing that, but they're not really kind of saying what it is, yeah.
Well, yeah,
the message they give usually is very, like, unhealthily masculine kind of response. It's like, that's what it is. Like, I'm pretty sure that's not a good thing to do for a lot of the things that they're like, this is what it is to be a man. So it makes me very uncomfortable when they do that.
Yeah. I suppose the... obviously then the other boys, Sam, Mike, you know, and Artie, confront Kurovsky, and Sam gets all this place for being a real leader and stuff like that, whereas that entire scene, it's all very clunky and weird to me. Like, they, you know, it's actually Mike and Artie that take the initiative, and then people are like, oh, Sam's a true leader, and you know, because he ends up getting the punch in the face, but only after, you know, he only goes after Kurovsky, you know, when... he's pulling him off, and I don't know, it's all very convoluted and strange, but the point is, you know, the boys, bar Finn, do their physical defense mechanism, and then Bert finds out as well with Finn and Kurt, and goes after Kurovsky, which is when Kurt, you know, tells his dad and Finn that Kurovsky threatened to kill him, and he gets, you know, pulled in with all of those people. I kind of liked both of the boys pulling Bert off Kurovsky, but they go in with Kurovsky's father, who seems very kind of demure and disappointed in him, and Kurovsky gets expelled, but then clearly that is repealed by the school board, so Kurt decides to transfer. And, yeah, basically, so the plot, you know, from here on out will be him going to Dalton and being safe there, I suppose, because Kurovsky's coming back to this school. Do you guys, in that final sort of scene or with that you know, Bert finding out about all of that stuff and going into those meetings with Sue, the principal, and Kurovsky's father and stuff like that, do you think that was sort of handled well or badly, or, you know, what did you guys think of this sort of progression in the plot? Sorry, go ahead, Mitch.
I really liked it, and I really liked that Kurovsky's father, first and foremost, admits that his son was wrong and notices things are going wrong with him.
Yeah,
doesn't just blow it off and is like, thank you for your time, I'm done. And I was watching that with my fiance John, and he kind of like, he was like, wow, I really respect that about that minor character that just came in for this one little role. And I know he makes a big impression with just that one little thing. And it's not even like he's on camera. He's like walking off and it just kind of said, but it's I think it's probably just the writing that made him such a reasonable character and not exactly the way that the character was played, right?
No, I definitely thought that as well. I definitely was, you know, that you often see big bully characters with big bully fathers, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well,
how dare you accuse my son of this, if you know what I mean.
And oh, yeah.
I think this was really nicely done. I actually did, which is why I put his dad as a point to talk about specifically.
Right.
So I actually really liked that as well. Jack, did you have something about that as well? Sorry.
Oh, I just really loved the scene in general, because it was so realistic. Like, everything that was said was exactly like if you were going to be looking at, like, something happening in real life. Like, Sue was reasonable as a principal, and everyone, I loved it. I really, really loved this scene.
Yeah, I really thought it was decent, the whole meeting, and, like, it was so uncomfortable, but it was so, yeah, well done. And I really loved the dancing scene as well, and I really loved sort of that. Yeah, just basically the way that everything tied into each other in this episode, I found really well done. Like the, you know, how the wedding plot affected the Kurovsky plot and vice versa, if you know what I mean. So yeah.
And like, again, like I appreciate that Kurt didn't like hold back. Like I appreciate that in the office he didn't sugarcoat the situation where Kurovsky said that he was going to kill Kurt. And like he said it, like he threatened to kill me if I do whatever. So I like that he wasn't like backing down. He was taking a stand for himself.
Yeah, Caitlin, what did you think of the outcome of this and the kind of parent interaction and like the parent handling of this situation?
I think it worked really well. Like everyone was saying, I think what really sticks out to me too is Sue's reaction and that she is very concerned the whole time about it. Like she is very genuinely concerned about the situation and she's clearly very upset when the
repeal.
Yeah. When the being expelled is repealed and everything, like she's very genuine and you don't see that very often with her, but the situation she takes very, very personally.
Yeah. I really like it as well.
She is a good principal.
Oh yeah. Yeah, she is.
She's a great principal. Like benefits. Yeah.
I really love all of the Kurt and Sue stuff all of the time, and there's definitely stuff in this episode that I really like. Like, I like when Kurt calls her out, if you know what I mean, and they're just so on the same page as each other so much of the time, and I really love that relationship, and I hope there's some of that in season 6, but yeah. Obviously, the happier aspect to that, the reason that the Bert is at the school, the reason that sort of this is all happening is because Bert and Carol get engaged. And I don't understand if this is all meant to take place in a week or a month or whatever, like if the little scenes about them originally getting engaged were meant to be set in the past, if you know what I mean. But yeah, they are certainly getting engaged and getting married within the context of this episode. Kurt is planning the wedding, includes the Glee Club. Finn kind of seems a bit about it, but by the time the wedding is on, he sort of comes around. We don't really spend much time seeing whether he's okay with it or not. Which is something I probably would have given more time to, a little bit about Finn. But we have the wedding scene itself in the church, the wedding speeches from the parents, and Mike O'Malley and Romy Rosemont are both so good in this episode. They're just they're like levels above like a lot of other aspects of this show, both of them. And then at the reception, we have Finn's speech to Kurt, you know, about Furt beginning, and I completely lost it in this. I was so unexpectedly crying in this, but yeah, so that happened. So yeah, just basically the entire wedding plot. We'll ignore the fact that it might have all taken place in 1 week because whatever. Yeah. Jack, how did you feel about the wedding and the, you know, what was given to each of the main characters, like that being Finn, Kurt, Bert, and Carol in this?
The wedding, the whole wedding, or just the
start with the wedding. Start with the wedding.
Okay. Yeah, I really loved it, and both of their speeches were, like, I mean, just what you said, like, they're both great actors, like, and they stand above a lot of the other people in the show, and it's nice to see, like, I don't know, I really, really like it. I've got more to say about the reception, but even just Marry You, like, if you don't get teary-eyed the first time you watch Marry You, you're doing something wrong. So
I love that so much. Cheesy, but it's always been one of my favorite Glee performances. Like,
everyone gets a line.
It's so good and cute. And
Natalie, do you remember? Oh, it was in the beginning of Glee Chat, so I'm going to be really impressed with your memory if you do. But I made a point about this song specifically. Obviously, we weren't covering this episode, saying that I found a YouTube channel that strips the instrumentals of specific songs from Glee for some reason. And unaltered, this song had, like, crazy, weird auto-tune that you can't hear with instruments on of, like, every single singer. I'll try and find it.
I don't know.
We'll have to see a legitimacy behind it, because it's very shocking.
Creepy, but I remember that.
Okay, Jack, so yeah.
That doesn't listen to me. It sounds creepy, but I don't remember, only because I really wanted to, like, find those channels because I was curious. So if you can send them to me,
then I had to find it for everyone else, too, if you're curious.
I've always wondered about the level of autotune.
Yeah, no, I have to. I want to see if it's actually legitimate or if this person altered it to make fun of them. I know it's out there. I'll do some Googling around. It's going to be funny when we find it.
Not that that aspect is terribly important, like the autotune, but I did notice in this song, like, it was really obvious they were lip-syncing as opposed to, like, they usually sing live on camera and then they match it up with whatever the studio recording is. This really looked like they were lip syncing and they were probably only, like, not actually singing out loud that much because of the, you know, just really fast-paced action, like, you know, action dancing. And I don't know, like, I really, like, could tell, you know, that was really obvious to me. But it was so cute in every way, like Finn and Rachel especially. I cried. And then Finn and Kurt leading the little parade of Glee Club people, but I just love it. But the speeches as well, like, were so beautiful, like, and I don't know, just, it's such a good TV wedding. It's so cheesy but gorgeous. Caitlin, how did you like it?
I love it. I love that Carol talks to both Bert and Kurt.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm marrying Bert and Kurt, sort of, because we're becoming one family, so I thought that was really sweet. I love it. I was smiling like an idiot.
Yeah.
One thing that I found funny about Bert's speech, though, and I don't think it was meant to be funny, but when he's like, God, grab me by the shoulders and push me in this direction, I'm like, no, that was Kurt.
Definitely. So, it was beautiful, and I loved it at the time, and I love it now, and
it doesn't get old.
Oh, it's so good. And then at the reception, obviously, we have Finn, who's the best man. We have the, you know, the dancing and whatever, and Schuster gets a song that he sounds good in but doesn't have any plot or lines, so I'm happy about that. So he can just stand in the corner and, like, sing Bublé, like, inoffensively, like, while other people have a plot. Like, whatever, that's fine. And Finn has a speech to Kurt, you know, about, you know, what their relationship has been like and all of that kind of stuff, a bit more like, you know, what it means to be a man, etc. But it is really nice, and then he dedicates the song to Kurt and dances with him, and I completely lost my, like, I lost it crying. Like I got some tears in the wedding, I think. I got some tears in, like, in Marry You or in the speech. This, I just, it was, and it was all Corey. It was all, like, watching Finn and, like, being like, you know, despite, you know, whatever, like, despite his earlier plot, it was like, you know, and despite whether we agree with, like, oh, did he actually do anything or not, just the intentions and, like, the earnestness of what he was saying, I was like, this character, he's such a good guy, like, and I just cried a lot, basically, about that, so that was fun. But yeah, obviously we have him, you know, give that to Kurt, and then what it would have meant for Kurt as well, you know, hopefully not anything creepy anymore in terms of, like, oh, this is the boy that I've been in love with, and now I'm finally dancing with him. That it was just a real honest happiness of, like, acceptance and friendship, and I just, oh, I don't know, it's just very beautiful. But yeah, Jack, how about you? I know you kind of, I said before that I was like, okay, I'm small delay, I've been crying, so I need to fix the document now, and you said that you understood, so yes, do you want to tell us about the reception for you?
Yeah, I mean, watching, like, this scene always, whenever I rewatch it, always gets me choked up, like, despite everything that's happened, like, since then, I just really, really, really like Finn's acknowledgement and what he says to Kurt, and, like, and even, like, what he says to Carol, like, I don't know what it is, like, I don't know what it is, like, it's just such a
good scene. Like, and it just chokes me up a lot. And then, granted, with everything that we find out, it was pretty upsetting. Just like, because all I could picture was like Carol's scene in the Finn tribute of how upset she was.
That was the same. It was Jack. Yeah. I had exactly the same. I was thinking about Carol and like Remy Rosemont and how she was in the Finn episode, basically, and how what I've heard her speak about Corey and that. And it wasn't just this episode. I was crying about the Kurt and Finn stuff. I was more thinking about, yeah, how those characters' lives, like Kurt's and Carol's lives, would be now, and how we haven't given a lot of time to that, you know, Glee's current time. And, you know, Carol's obviously a guest star. She's not around that much, but we haven't given that much time to, like, Kurt and what losing Finn would be for him, if you know what I mean. And we haven't had much of that aside from the actual tribute episode, in which part Kurt wasn't a huge part of it. Like, he was there, but he wasn't a massive part of it. And I don't know, it just made me start thinking about their world, and I lost my, yeah, I just lost my shit crying. So that was good.
I think I enjoyed it a bit more because, like, I think a lot of times as Glee progresses, I find it really hard to understand and see the connection that Finn and Kurt have with each other, just because I don't see it on screen as much.
Yeah.
So, like, based on what we know now and then seeing this, I just liked seeing them act as brothers, essentially. And I really liked how, like, and I've always thought this, how when Kurt and Finn are dancing together and when Finn's singing this song to Kurt, like, essentially, yeah, like, Kurt, like 6-8 months ago would have, like, died for that to happen, you know, died for the person he was crushing on to sing this beautiful song to him. But now he loves him in a different way for that, and that's what I really like, how you could sort of just see that in his expressions and his stuff.
Yeah, it's a very pure happiness. Like, there's a lot of, yeah, you know, the take on Kurt is obviously something we've talked a lot about, like, you know, whether he's an innocent or not, like, what the kind of person he is. This is a very innocent Kurt. This is a very, like, very kind of purely happy and a very kind of no bad motivations Kurt, which is, I don't know, they haven't been very consistent with that at various times. But, you know, Kurt in season two so far has just been so worn down. I think he just doesn't have time to be, you know, a terrible person, basically, because all he's done is being, like, you know, harassed, and he's just done such a good job of being completely exhausted and just lacking in life, basically. And the wedding thing seems to perk him up a bit, and this is a real moment of happiness for him in a moment, you know, a general time that he's not very happy. So I did kind of love it. But yeah, Caitlin, how about you for the Furt dance, etc., and speech?
The one thing that kept going through my head was the line about Glee is about opening yourself up to joy.
Yeah.
And, like, this is just, this scene, yeah, the reception is just pure joy.
Yeah.
So I just kept going, this is Glee in every definition of the word right here. So that's just all that kept going through my head.
Yeah. Oh, you make me cry again. So, Mitch, were you a fan of this, or are you going to kind of, like, throw an anchor into us and take us in a different direction?
No, if that wasn't a dig at my personality, I don't know what was. I liked everything on Marry You. I have my favorite little part from that. And when we're going about, like, our favorite forgotten scenes. And encompassing the whole wedding. I like the whole, like, we're one family now, but it's kind of funny when you guys were mentioning, like, no, it's not really God that put you into Carol's arms. It's actually just
creepy son.
Yeah, it's just crazy Kurt. That's it. Yeah, I found that pretty funny too. Yeah, and it's weird because Finn doesn't seem to really be into it in the beginning of the episode. He's like, "You're getting married? What?" And then the end when you know, she's like doing the whole thing. It's funny to me because you know, yeah, he still doesn't seem into it, but Carol seems to be convinced that
it seems like we missed a scene somewhere of, like, Finn becoming enthusiastic about the wedding, basically, because he is fine at the wedding, but at the beginning he's like, what about it? If you don't miss it, yeah, I am happy for you, Mum. We seem to have missed a little bit about that. And that might be because we had this side plot of Sue's marrying herself, which is just insane. I don't know why they did it. I don't know if anyone enjoyed it.
Okay, I didn't enjoy the actual plot, but I enjoyed what came out of the plot.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
It was a real, it showed some real, like, vulnerability, real issues. It showed some really important stuff, like the relationship with the, you know, Sue's mother and her sister and what their life had been like. We had Sue actually, like, break down crying because of her mother being such a bitch. But it was all wrapped up in this insane plot about Sue marrying herself. Like, why did they do that? I don't... Does anyone have any answers to this? Like, I just... What? What happened? Why? No.
I like just seeing Sue vulnerable. Like,
yeah, the plot, what came out of it with Sue and the mother, like the scenes about, you know, oh, Sue confronting her mother and her mother's issues. Why didn't you just put that in another episode? Sue and her mother without the wedding in another episode and give more time in this episode to, like, I don't know, like Santana's problems about, like, trying to jump on Finn. Like, again, like, this is Santana trying to find a possible way to be straight. They could have, like, you know, given her a little bit more about what the hell was going on there, or something like that. As opposed, you know, put Sue and her mother in a different episode where it wasn't about Sue marrying herself, like, where it was just, like, the mother's coming back for, like, some other special occasion, I don't know, like,
well, something. That touches on the point of Glee that, like, bothers me, like, and, like, to bring it back to weddings, like, what annoys me is how in episodes of Glee, they have to center every single storyline around the theme of the episode, and that's what happens in most TV shows, but an example of that is, like, how in episode 3:10, Yes, No, in season 3, like, there's literally three marriage plot lines, there's Will and Emma, there's Cuda and Beast, and Finn and Rachel. It was like, why can't you just have the Finn and Emma plot, Finn and Emma, wow. Well, that did happen.
Yeah, Will and Emma don't knock line. The Finn and Emma plot line. I was so here for it, but anyway, go on.
Yeah, but, like, why can't we just have Will and Emma? Why do we need to have two other marriage plot lines just because it's a marriage episode, you know?
Yeah, that's, like, you don't have to keep making this theme. Like, even if the mother had come back in this episode, it didn't have to be about Sue marrying herself. Because,
exactly,
like, Sue marrying herself makes it seem like that she's actually insane, if you know what I mean. Like, that she's really, like, not with it. And I just, I don't know. Caitlin, any thoughts about Sue marrying herself? Like, why? Can you give me any explanation at all?
Oh, I got nothing. I was just groaning the whole time. I appreciated that they cast Carol Burnett as her mother and was like, her mother is actually as insane as she is, so it explains a lot, but... Like, why did this need to be a stupid plotline?
Like, it certainly tied into, like, the bullying plotline, if you know what I mean. Like, because, you know, you have that. You're like, oh, it's like, oh, how can we tie the Karofsky plot to the wedding plot? Hang on, let's add another plot about weddings and bullies. Okay, we nailed it. It's like, guys, you didn't nail it. Guys, you didn't nail it. But, yeah, I don't know. It's just, like, it's so weird to me. The Carol Burnett stuff, the relationship with the mother, even the performance, which was kind of weird, but it was well done, was all really, really, like, significant, and it was really, like, you know, great stuff from Jane Lynch, but why the hell was it tied into her thinking she could marry herself? Like, I just, what? Yeah, I just don't,
like,
even
the concepts
know.
The concepts were there, and the idea was there, just not how it was done.
Yeah, it was insane. Mitch, Mitch, this kind of seems like your kind of brand of humor, though. Did you actually like Well, it's true.
Well, it's funny that you picked that out of all things. I didn't think it was my usual typical brand of humor, but I did choose it as another one of my favorite little scenes, this whole, like, marrying herself bit. And it was funny, too, because I was paying close attention, and I think Jane Lynch was able to really articulate when she was who.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Which was cute. And you could tell she really enjoyed this plot, too. And I really liked seeing her sister come in, too. That was nice to have her just be like, you know, I don't like you either. Like, you really just can't come back in. And I've had a lot of that stuff in my own life, too, where it's just like, you know, someone tries to shove their way back into your life when you haven't seen it for so long and control you, or, like, you know, it's probably just mostly parents, but, like, what, you know, like, even a friend that tries to assert a power over you when you know that you've been, like, your own independent person for so long, minus their help, and they're only going to hinder you at that point, and you've kind of, like, you've cut them out for a good reason, for more like a friend's purposes, for my sake, rather than parents. So, yeah, I appreciated that part of the storyline, and I did appreciate the humor, because I thought that Jane Lynch was spot on with how she was acting as each person.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if they knew it. I don't know if they had planned at this point. Like, I feel like they should have written all of the episodes for season two at this point, but it was pretty early on and they were probably writing as they go. I don't know if the funeral episode, like second to last of this season, like where Jean Sylvester dies, I don't know if that was written specifically because the actress died or if it was like a part of the plot anyway, or if they, if you know what I mean, like, because
did the actress die?
Yeah, she did. Yeah, she did.
Because in that episode, there are flashbacks of Sue and her together.
Oh, maybe. Oh, God.
I swear there is.
I thought, okay.
Maybe, her health had taken a turn or something like that, and she was not doing well.
Yeah. I was really under the impression that it was, that she was written off, but maybe I completely got that wrong. The point is, if they knew they were going to write this episode, I don't understand why they didn't bring back the mother for this instead and have a really, I mean, that would have been like really emotionally like messed up, if you know what I mean, like Sue and her having this altercation about, how terrible the mother was and now the sister has died and stuff like that. But I don't know, it was kind of ridiculous, but what can you do? It's Glee. Suppose we've got to deal with this kind of stuff. No, I will correct myself. I don't think that the actress did die. She may have been written on for a pretty serious reason, but I don't think it was that she died. So I'll correct that. But regardless, if this was a plot they knew they were writing in, if it wasn't like a reaction to the actress dying, they should have put the mother in that episode and not this, because this is just dumb. But what can you do? A couple of other sort of very small parts of the episode were Sam and Quinn kind of getting together and Sam like proposing to Quinn, like proposing with a like promise ring. So did anyone have any like yay, nay thoughts on like that? Caitlin, you're a Sam fan. Did you think this was cute or like weird?
Just weird. Why? Sam, you're cute, but no. Just what are you doing?
It's just an example of Glee having to like make everything in this episode somewhat like marriage related.
Yeah, for real. It's so weird. And
I love that Quinn wasn't having it. Quinn was like, nah, stand up. This is not good.
Quinn is like, she was like, are you six? Like, Quinn is like so much smarter than like everyone else around her at all times. She's so much like, she's so far ahead of them all. Like, whether it's for better or worse, whether it's like a good or a bad thing, she's like so much sharper. And like, maybe it's, you know, because of everything she's been to, but she's so not bogged down in that kind of stuff. But then she, you know, in the previous episode, she goes to, you know, Sue, and she's like, I'm losing my position. I need to be prom queen. And it's just like, I don't know, girl. Like, you're better than this. It's fine. You can. It's so weird, but I don't know. Mitch, do you like the Sam Quinn proposal / weirdness that happened?
I like Caitlin said, or no, actually, it was you that said for the last episode we just covered, Quinn's reaction. Because she reacted really well to when Sam was like, beast. And then she also reacted really well when he was like, will you, like, promise me you'll be with me forever kind of thing. And then her reaction was just like, I've seen boys become too obsessed and I know the bad things that happen. I've been there and I've done that. Like, stand up, you're done.
she's like, no, I'm going to make this decision to be with you. If it means wearing this ring, I'm going to go break into your locker. Like, she's just so ruthless and weird. I love her, but yeah, it's a weird plot.
She's handy with a nail file. Did she sand off his lock? Like, break it?
I'm assuming she picked it. I'm assuming she, like, she jiggled it, like she put it. Anyway, I don't know the specifics of that. And then, as I sort of mentioned earlier as well, Santana kind of coming in and giving Finn, like, you know, talking to Finn and him sort of affirming his love for Rachel, which is all very cute. But, you know, she's really, you know, Santana's like, get rid of Rachel so we can see each other. You can tell everyone we had sex. Like, does anyone have any actual deep opinions about what the hell that was all about?
Yeah, I agree with what you've been saying this episode, Natalie, like how I think a lot of her actions is just her covering up her sexuality. Like, I didn't really think about it before until now, but it does make sense.
Neither did I.
It was never addressed in the show.
Yeah.
But I agree.
Yeah. Because it's just that we just keep getting these bizarre Santana moments that don't really fit with anything else. Like, and I don't know, I probably would have taken away this Sue plot and given a bit more time to Finn dealing with the wedding and this Finn and this Santana, whatever the hell's going on with her, like even just a little moment of why the hell she acts this way. But yeah. Does anyone else have any major thoughts about this episode before we go down to the quotes and moments? Any major plot thoughts about, you know, any of those aspects?
Yeah, just a comment on
where
we just were talking about with that odd Santana thing. I guess I didn't see it as being as random as you and Jack just said you did. I kind of sort of appreciated it. I know it came out of left field, and that's where it can be considered random, but it made sense that this was happening because it needed to happen eventually. I don't know how else it could have been introduced. And I think that was a loose end that was never tied up. And
it did serve to show that, like, that reveal with Rachel, you know, that now Finn knows that her and Jesse didn't do the deed, and, you know, like, that was the reveal of that.
Because to me, Finchel is like a slow-burning candle. It takes a while to get down to, like, the bottom part where it's the good part, if that analogy makes any sense. I think that they needed to, the Glee writers, this is me giving them kudos, I think they needed to do what they did with Finchel to bring them up to, I'd say, like, up to the New York City plot where, you know, Finn just says, like, you're gonna go there, we're done, just, like, do your thing, I can't have you thinking about me. This all kind of builds up to that, because they've had such a trust, you know, the first time we'll see a lot of that, too. I know that you don't like that episode, Natalie, and I that's why I dug this scene, and I like Santana emotional. I like when she's thinking more than just sexually, when she's getting down to her character with someone that she sees sexually.
I suppose. I'm not sure how that reflected on Santana in this episode. She just seemed very,
regardless of what we find out later, that she is a lesbian, from the first view standpoint, this spoke to me that Santana still has feelings stronger for Finn than she anticipated after sleeping with him.
I don't think that's correct at all. I don't think that's what it was about at all. I don't know about anyone else, but, like, Santana doesn't have feelings for guys. She
feigns them all the time.
She feigns them, and I think that this was her trying to, like, she clearly has a lot of feelings for Finn as a human being, but I don't think that this was about her emotionally trying to get Finn back. I think she 100% knows what's going on with her, or at least she knows what she feels and what she doesn't. I don't know. Jack, Caitlin, do either of you sort of have any thoughts on that? Like, I don't know, from the outside perspective, like, when she kind of started turning around, but did either of you sort of take this as her still actually wanting to get with Finn, like, for her own reasons?
No.
Not really.
I mean, I think it's significant that this happens right before the wedding, and clearly that's stirring up something in her. But I can't put my finger on exactly what it would be to push her to do what she did.
To me, it's almost like, this is what people do. Hey, this is what's normal. This is, you know, look, weddings, look, men and women. Come on, girl, you can do this. Like, you can actually, you know, let's make this happen, if you know what I mean. But
in, like, a plot standpoint as well, like, next episode that we're not going to cover, the sectionals episode, Rachel finds out that Santana and Finn slept together.
Yeah.
So I think, like, for, like, the audience, I think this is just a reminder as well to,
yeah,
like,
totally, remember totally,
that happened, just so we can get some depth on the breakup for the next episode.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. It just from the perspective of what the hell Santana's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But in terms of the moments and quotes and stuff like that, do we want to roll down those? Jack, what was yours?
Yep. And Caitlin took my favorite quotes. Hang on. Moments or favorite quotes? Which one is
go
it?
Go moments first.
Moments, sorry. Okay, well then you two both took my favorite moments. I got in late. So I've already really spoken about mine, but it's Finn's speech to Carol, just because I wanted to bring it up, because whenever I rewatched it, it always gets me choked up, and I still feel the same now. So I always love that.
Like, he's not very eloquent, but he's just so, like,
yeah,
Finn.
So heartfelt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Caitlin, was this one of the ones that you stole from Jack? Is this one of the ones Jack wanted?
And Natalie as well. It goes Caitlin, then it goes Natalie. So.
Oh, sorry.
Well, the one I stole from Jack is, which is the whole Bert coming down the aisle and dancing because he was so adorable. I could not handle it.
Yeah, it was so good. And mine that I apparently also stole from Jack was the bit where the first meeting between Sue and Kurt, where he kind of calls out like, hey, you know, when you call me lady, that's also bullying. It doesn't make me feel good. And she's just like, oh, sorry, I thought that was your name. I'll allow you to pick from another option of nicknames. And then she gives him the options of, what was it, Gelfling, Porcelain, and
Tickle Me
Dough Face. And he's like, just like, I guess I'll go with Porcelain. Like, it's kind of, they're so on a level with each other. It's really like, I just love it so much.
And like, even after that, when she says, damn, I wish you would have chosen Tickle Me Dough Face, and she's got a smirk on her face, but it's not like a callous,
they kind of know, they are on the same page in a level that very few characters in this show are. I would watch a Kurt and Sue spin-off. Like, I seriously would. Like, I would watch him being like, I don't know, like, oh, I don't know, like 10 years down the line or something, like being like, I don't know. They have something. They have an understanding. And, like, you know that she's not going to call him anything except Porcelain, if you know what I mean. You know that she's going to respect him, especially from what the circumstances are that this came out of. And it just nails it. And I just love it. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Mitch, how about you?
Kind of another Sue thing, too. It's the Sue wedding, as I described before.
Yeah. The actual ceremony of her going between one and the other.
Yeah, like, oh, of course, her jumpsuit, too, that she's wearing, the jumpsuit dress.
So that bit was only meant to be the rehearsal. Did Sue actually go through with the real wedding of marrying in each other, or did she not?
It was just the rehearsal.
So yeah. She actually, we never found out if she went through with it or not, I suppose.
She makes allusions, like,
that she married herself once.
Yeah, like, in season 5, when she's talking to that guy in New York, and she's like, oh, once I married myself, think it was legal. But I don't think she even did that. I think she was just like, haha, this is what I was going to do.
Yeah.
I don't really know.
Okay.
And it's really odd, too, because as soon as Sue made the joke within her own vows, where she was the minister or whatever, she was like, and from the power vested in me by some random internet thing, I was really sick of this joke already because I just watched that happen on another show on a Gossip Girl. Someone got married with like another like, you know, odd pastor, and it got me to thinking that my fiance that I've talked about a couple times on Glee Chat, John, he can officiate weddings because he's done an online course. It's not like a big deal to like officiate a wedding. Apparently, you can just like
in most TV shows that's the go. Like in Friends, Joey like officiated Monica and Chandler's, and in Parks and Rec, Tom and Jerry officiated Leslie and Ben. So like it's like a trope for every TV show. It's like the friend will always be. You know, everyone has a role, and one of the roles is to officiate the wedding.
Yeah, you can get assigned to officiate a wedding. I don't think you can officiate your own wedding. I don't think that you can, like, be the... If you are one of the two participants, I don't think you can also be the celebrant, even if there was another person. You know, if me and Jack were getting married, I couldn't officiate me and Jack's marriage or whatever. Not that Jack and I are getting married. We
haven't. Sorry, you guys know.
Yeah,
I know what you're talking about. Well, a more pertinent example would be that not John Thrasher, but my fiance John couldn't officiate our own future wedding.
Clarify that, yeah.
Right, I know, that probably gets confusing for some people. I'm hoping that no one really thinks I'm engaged to John Thrasher at this point, because that would be awkward. Because it'd be like, we just don't talk to each other on the show, like, lovey-dovey, but, like, we have a secret. That's just odd, you know? So I'm glad I cleared that up for you guys.
Well, we'll go with the quotes now. So, Jack, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, so Caitlin took my quote.
Oh, okay.
So I went for another one. I went for Bert when he's talking in the wedding, and he says, what we were living just wasn't living. You know that saying that when God closes a door, he opens a window? Well, sometimes out of nowhere, he'll do you one better, and he'll kick a whole wall down. And I really like that, because it's really sweet, but it's also funny, and I think it really lends to Bert's character quite well.
Yeah. Caitlin, how about you?
So, mine was between Finn and Kurt, we're talking about the wedding, and Finn says, are you sure we should free 300 live doves indoors? Won't that get messy? And Kurt says, that's why we feed them glitter.
What?
Those poor doves.
Yeah, like, of course we'll feed them glitter. Like, that's going to work.
Hello.
I'd love to see an aside of Kurt, like, just covered in glitter, trying to shove it down their throats, like, in little beakers, just like, take it, come on! And the thing is, like, biting at him and stuff.
So weird.
And Finn is just like, oh, okay, yeah.
And there are no doves. The wedding has zero doves.
Jesus. I had a toss-up between one of them was actually just sort of the background of the Kurt and Finn and Bert dance scene in the choir room. That they were all, that scene felt very ad-libbed, like both Kurt's sort of hurried speech, it didn't sound like he was reciting a line, and then Bert in the background, he was like, look, my feet are moving and there's music, I'm dancing. And I was just like, oh, Alon, I love you. But I also just loved the Finn and Kurt at the wedding when he's about to sing the song, they're just the way you are. And he kind of says, you know, I've prepared this number, and he kind of comes over and leans down. And he's like, you're going to dance it with me, dude. And it's just this really nice moment of, I don't know, just the way Finn talks to Kurt. Like, I don't know, I just like it a lot. Like, I just, something about his delivery, I don't know, it's kind of, like, it sounds a bit like cliche to be like, oh, he's being, like, he's just talking to him like he's, you know, just one of the guys or whatever. It's just, the dynamic of their relationship, like for him being like, yeah, come and slow dance with me, dude, if you know what I mean. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's just nice. It's just really unique, and I just love it. I love the delivery and the kind of little grin he had. Like, he knew what it would mean to Kurt, and he knew what it would have meant in the past, and he knows that it's sort of quote-unquote, like, safe now, like that it's not like that now, and he knows exactly, like, what he's doing, and I just really, it was really perceptive and nice, and I just loved it. But yeah, Mitch, yeah. How about you with the quotes?
Yeah, so mine's during right after the "Who sees it" moment, where the main newscaster Rod says, "I popped the question. My building's common use hot tub. Booyah! Not to worry, ladies. It's an open marriage. We'll be right back."
Oh, those newscasters are so weird. They're so
newscasters are always the best. Like, in any show, they're always the best.
Oh, that's so weird. All of that,
this,
like,
is another example of how, like, every single thing in this episode had to be about a marriage.
Oh, for real. Yeah, that's true.
I love the newscaster, the weathercaster, actually, in Family Guy, specifically.
I was just thinking of that. And How Met Your Mother.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so weird.
They're fun. But, I mean, it's funny to me that he would only say ladies, because he's blatantly admitted that he's had sex with Freddie Mercury, so... maybe he's just not out to the world. That's fine, whatever. But
oh my god,
or is why?
Anyway,
yeah, that's, well, that's what
moving on from Rod Remington. He's a hoot. But imagine walking into him on the street. Imagine, like, spotting, like, the guy who plays Rod Remington on the street. I would, like, run away screaming. I would be so,
like
would you recognize him? I don't know if...
Absolutely.
I hope he wouldn't run around with that slicked back hair. And
then I would be like, yeah, I know you.
There are a lot of minor characters, I feel like.
He looks like the dad from Seventh Heaven. Like, he looks like the priest dad.
Saw in Star Trek, and it's so weird to see him young, because he was actually attractive.
okay. Good time.
Wow.
let's move on from those men. The songs in this episode, quickly, were Ohio, which is from a musical called Wonderful Town, I think. And that was really well, like, I mean, it was, like, awkward and whatever, but it was really well done. Like, they basically adapted the dialogue of the musical, and usually with Glee, that's really annoying, but this actually worked pretty well, despite the fact that it was, like, all-round ridiculous, or perhaps because of the fact that it was all-round ridiculous. Then we obviously had Marry You, again, by Bruno Mars. Both of the songs were by Bruno Mars, right? Like, the Marry You and Just the Way You Are is Bruno Mars. And then
I noticed
Sway,
that the second time around. That's kind of strange, isn't it?
I don't know. I guess maybe they got the rights to the whole album or something.
Yeah.
and then Sway, which was it's not actually by Michael Bublé, but the cover, the one he did was the Michael Bublé version, and Will just sung in the background while Carol and Bert did their first dance. So, did anyone have any thoughts on a particular musical number? I mean, obviously, Marry You and Just the Way You Are big parts of the plot that we've talked about, but any further thoughts from anyone? Jack?
I love Marry You so much. It's just, you can just tell they're all having so much fun, and that crosses over into Just the Way You Are as well. Like, Finn's like, we prepared a number, and, like, they did, but they're not, like, it's not perfectly choreographed, and they're just having so much fun with each other, and both of the songs are really well selected. Yeah.
Yeah. Caitlin, did you have any thoughts about the songs that we haven't already talked about?
No, not particularly.
That's cool. Just checking in case we missed anything. And Mitch, did you have anything as well, but besides what we've already talked about?
Yeah, and I guess everyone can expect this from me now that I love the Quinn parts in Marry You. They're so pretty. She's such a good voice for that song.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I like love her little runs, too. Like, when she's like, ooh, she does that so well. She has a really smooth tone when she moves notes in a run like that on a held vowel. That's my favorite type of vocalese that she does.
Yeah, I really like the whole thing of Marry You, even though, as I said, it's very very lip-synced on screen, but, you know, I like the recording of it, and I think it's cool.
And
but,
Mike sings, does he not? Like, this is before he should sing, but he sings.
He does. Everyone,
every pair has their line that they go in. Yeah, I suppose so.
That's just funny to me.
Kenny's a bit louder, but you can hear him. Like, I always like thinking about that. I always think about Mike singing.
Yeah, that's it's probably one of the only moments I can remember. Jack, the Encyclopedia can confirm this, that we really hear Mike singing.
At this point, like, it's the only time you hear him proper sing, other than, like, his fake singing with Tina. But then, like, I mean, I really enjoy the Mike, the overarching Mike dance singing plotline. So then he gets more of that in season three.
Yeah. My main thought was like, oh, okay, so Carol and Bert have, like, no adult friends to be their, like, bridesmaids and stuff. Like, Carol especially.
Well, their parents aren't there to walk them down the aisle.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that they, you know, I understand that they wouldn't necessarily, like, have anyone except Finn or Kurt be the best man, but, like, Carol doesn't have any girlfriends to be, like, involved in the wedding. I mean, it's fine, you know, if they just want to have these children, but, you know, no one has any adult friends on this show. It's okay. Like, they all just are friends with the Glee Club. That's
well, how about
well,
like, family
it took
members.
A week to put together, so none of them could get off of work.
Maybe that's true, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Probably true. Anyway. Okay, well, we'll round this off for now because this is going to be a very long episode, which we did sort of expect, but unfortunately it is still quite long. So unless anyone has any final thoughts, we shall let you guys go and see you in a couple of weeks with the next couple of episodes of season two. Awesome. So, yeah. Bye-bye. Thank you to all. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Da 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 da.